A green sign hurtles through space toward a blue planet. Turner. In a black and white film, a note appears from the British Board of Film Censors. This is to certify that Lolita has been passed for exhibition when no child under 16 is present. Now a logo of a thickly maned lion framed by a ring of film. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Titles appear. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer presents, in association with Seven Arts Productions, James B. Harris and Stanley Kubrick's Lolita. Copyright 1961 by AA Productions Limited. All rights reserved. This film is described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, WGBH Boston. Described by Lisa Benjamin. Read by Peter Haydu. Funded by the U.S. Department of Education. Now an adolescent girl's smooth, slender foot drops into view. A man's hand tenderly slips a piece of cotton between her big and middle toe to separate them. He then applies polish to her big toenail. Her foot trembles slightly as it rests in the palm of his hand. More titles appear, starring James Mason, Shelley Winters, and introducing Sue Lyon, with Gary Cockrell, Jerry Stovin, Diana Decker, Lois Maxwell, Seck Linder, Bill Green, Shirley Douglas, and others, and Peter Sellers as Quilty. The unseen man gently fits more cotton snugly between the girl's second and third toes. Then he lightly and carefully brushes on polish, working his way down her foot. More titles. Music composed and conducted by Nelson Riddle. Lolita theme by Bob Harris. Orchestrations by Gil Grau. Director of photography, Oswald Morris, BSc. Editor, Anthony Harvey. Screenplay by Vladimir Nabokov, based on his novel, Lolita. Produced by James B. Harris. Directed by Stanley Kubrick. The unseen man applies a final dab of polish to the girl's pinky toe, and the screen fades to black. Now a blanket of fog drapes a highway. A white station wagon drives through it, vanishing into the mist. Later, the station wagon pulls up the long driveway of a large mansion with castle-like towers and parapets. Inside, moments later, a man walks through the front door and enters. Paintings, small statues, furniture covered with sheets, and dirty ashtrays clutter the front hall. The man kicks an empty champagne bottle as he walks around. Handsome and dapper, he's in his early 40s and has dark hair and a cleft chin. The gentleman's dressed in an elegant coat trimmed with fur. Wandering about the ornate but messy mansion, he enters a sitting room. Crumpled papers are scattered across the floor. Spotting a harp, he fingers its strings. His brow furrows curiously as he resumes his search. The gentleman's glance flits all around.
Quilty?
He steps past a ping-pong table littered with wine glasses.
Quilty?
A sheet covering a chair begins to move. A man pokes his head out.
What's that?
Are you Quilty?
No, I'm Spartacus. You come to free the slaves or something?
Are you Quilty?
Yeah, I'm Quilty. Yeah, sure.
He stands clumsily.
What you putting your gloves on for, Captain? Your hands cold or something?
Shall we have a little chat before we start?
Before we start? Wow. All righty. No, listen. Let's have a game, a little lovely game of Roman ping pong, like two civilized senators.
He picks up a paddle.
Roman ping?
The gentleman stares at Quilty stoically.
You're supposed to say Roman pong. Okay, you serve. I just don't mind. Come on.
He sways drunkenly, then waves another ball at his guest.
Ah. Bet you didn't know I had the Roman ping pong.
The ball bounces toward his opponent and drops off the table.
Kind of tricky serve to handle, eh, Captain? Kind of tricky. One of the champs taught me that.
Quilty produces a third ball.
My motto is be prepared.
The gentleman picks up a paddle as Quilty serves.
Say, you Jack Brewster, are you?
You know who I am.
What's that? That's three. Three love. Gee, I'm really winning. You want to get a rally going there. You know, I'm not accusing you, Captain, but it's sort of absurd the way people invade this house without even knocking. 4-1. Change service. I'll take the service again if you don't mind. I'd sort of like to have it up this end. You know, they use the telephone.
The ball bounces off a brandy Jeez. Glass.
What's that? That must be a... Gee, I'm really winning here. I'm really winning. I hope I don't get overcome with power. That's about 6-1, maybe. Let's say 6-1. No, 6-2. I'll give you another point. 6-2, but I'm still winning.
You really don't remember me, do you?
Have you ever noticed how the champs, different champs, use their bats? You know, some of them hold them like this and everything.
Do you recall a girl called Dolores Hayes?
I remember one guy, he didn't have a hand. He had a bat instead of a hand. He was a real sort of wacky guy.
Lolita! Yeah.
Lolita! Yeah. Yeah, I remember that name, all right. Maybe she made some telephone calls. Who cares? Gee!
The gentleman brandishes a pistol. Quilty's mouth drops open.
Hey, you're a sort of bad loser, Captain. I never found a guy who sort of pull a gun on me when he lost the game. Didn't anyone ever tell you? It's not really who wins, it's how you play, like the champs.
Quilty puts his paddle down.
Listen, I don't think I want to play anymore. I want to get a drink. Gee, I'm just dying for a drink. I'm just dying to have a drinky.
He picks up a half-empty glass.
You're dying anyway, Quilty.
Jeez. All my friends always put that smoke it out in the drink. So unsanitary.
Quilty, I want you to concentrate. You're going to die. Try to understand what is happening to you.
You are either Australian or a German refugee. This is a Gentile's house. You better run along.
Think of what you did, Quilty. And think of what is happening to you now.
Gee, that's a darling little gun you got there. That's a darling little thing. How much a guy like you want for a darling little gun like that?
Read this.
What's this, the deeds of the ranch?
It's your death sentence. Read it.
Can't read, mister. I never did none of that there book learning, you know.
Read it, Quilty.
Locking onto his gaze, Quilty unfolds the sheet of paper.
Because you took advantage of a sinner. Because you took advantage. Because you took advantage of my disadvantage. Hey, that's a dad blasted darn good poem you done there. When I stood Adam naked, oh, Adam naked, you should be ashamed of yourself, Captain. Before a federal law and all its stinging stars. Tarnation, you old horn-toed, that's mighty pretty. That's a pretty poem. Because you took advantage. It's getting a bit repetitious, isn't it? Because, another one, because you cheated me. Because you took her at an age when young lads...
Enough.
Say, what you take it away for, mister? That's getting kind of smutty there.
Do you have any last words before you die, Quilty?
Listen, Mac. You're drunk. And I'm a sick man. This pistol-packing farce is becoming a sort of nuisance. Why don't you and I sort of settle this like two civilized people?
He puts on boxing gloves, then faces his foe.
All right, put him up.
Do you want to die standing up or sitting down?
I want to die like a champion.
The bullet fires through one of Quilty's gloves. He removes his hand unharmed.
Right in the boxing glove. You want to be more careful with that thing. Listen, Captain, why don't you stop trifling with life and death? I'm a playwright, you know, I know all about this sort of tragedy and comedy and fantasy and everything. I got 52 successful scenarios to my credit, added to which my father's a policeman. Listen, you look like a music lover to me. Why don't you let...
He sits at a piano.
Why don't you let me play you a little thing I wrote last week? Nice sort of opening that, eh? We could dream up some lyrics, maybe. You and I dream them up together. You know, I'll go share the profits. I think it'll make the hit parade. The moon was blue, and so were you. And I tonight, she's mine, yours. She's yours tonight.
Quilty takes a sip from a beer bottle, then hurls it at the gentleman, who fires again. Quilty races up a staircase. At the top, he grabs his thigh and stumbles. He eyes his foe, who stands at the bottom.
She hurt me, to really hurt me. Listen, if you're trying to scare me, you did a pretty swell job, all right. My leg will be black and blue tomorrow.
The man reloads. Quilty drags himself away.
You know, this house is roomy and cool. You see how cool it is. Oh, I intend moving to England or Florence forever. You could move in. I got some nice friends, you know, who could come and keep you company here. You could use them as pieces of furniture. This one guy looks just like a bookcase. I could fix for you to attend executions. How would you like that?
The gentleman stalks up the steps toward him. On the landing, Quilty rests against several framed paintings.
No, because not many people know that the chair is painted yellow. You'd be the only guy in the know.
He crawls behind a portrait of a young woman.
Tell him. Oh, that hurt.
The gentleman shoots through the painting. Bullets pierce the young woman's arm, then neck, then cheek. The screen fades to black. A note appears. 4 years earlier. Now an airplane coasts above the Manhattan skyline.
Having recently arrived in America, where so many Europeans had found a haven before, I decided to spend a peaceful summer in the attractive resort town of Ramsdale, New Hampshire. Some English translations I had made of French poetry had enjoyed some success, and I had been appointed to a lectureship at Beardsley College, Ohio, in the fall. Friends had given me several addresses in Ramsdale where lodgings were available for the summer.
Now a woman shows the gentleman around her house.
Mr. Hostetter said that you're going to be staying all summer?
Well, that was only a tentative plan.
Oh, monsieur, if what you're needing is peace and quiet, I can assure you, you couldn't get more peace anywhere.
Yes, it is. It's very peaceful.
Now, this would be your room. It's what you might call a studio. Well, you know, a semi-studio affair. It's very male and quiet. We're really very fortunate here in West Ramsdale. Culturally, we're a very advanced group. With lots of good Anglo-Dutch and Anglo-Scotch stock. And we're very progressive, intellectually.
That is immediately apparent.
Oh, I do hope you'll want to address our club. There's a nice view from this window of the front lawn. And a good place for you to do your writing. Shelves for your books.
That's very nice, yes.
I am a chairman of the Great Books Committee. As a matter of fact, you know, one of the speakers that I had last season was Claire Quilty.
Claire Quilty? Mm.
The writer, TV? TV play?
No, I wouldn't.
Oh, he's a very stimulating type of man. He gave us a talk on Dr. Schweitzer and Dr. Zhivago.
Schweitzer and Zhivago.
Uh-huh.
Very nice.
He turns away.
Oh, no. The bathroom's back here. Right next door. Well, we still have that good old-fashioned quaint plumbing. Should appeal to a European.
She tugs a string to flush the toilet.
Oh, excuse the soiled sock.
He eyes a ceramic cat.
I see that you're interested in art. In that case, you really must see the collection of reproductions I have in my bedroom. Voila.
Oh, yes, that's...
Dufy.
That's right.
And there's my little Van Gogh. Monet. Is Madame Humbert...
There's no Madame. We are divorced.
Oh.
Happily divorced.
When did all this happen?
About a year ago, in Paris.
Oh, Paris, France, Madame. You know, Monsieur, I really believe that it's only in the romance languages that one is able to really relate in a mature fashion.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I remember when the late Mr. Hayes and
I... Was the late Mr. Hayes, hmm?
Yes, he's passed on.
Oh.
But when we were on our honeymoon abroad, I knew that I'd never felt married until I heard myself addressed as Señora.
You're in Spain?
No, Mexico.
Oh, Mexico.
Oh, there were so many places we had planned to travel. But he was occupied with his work. He was in insurance. Left me well provided for. He was a lovely human being.
She shows him a photo.
A man of complete integrity. I know you would have liked to talk to the late Mr. Hayes and he to you.
Yes, I'm sure I would have.
Those are his ashes.
His hands resting on an urn. He quickly removes it.
How late was the late Mr. Hayes?
7 years. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult for a woman, an attractive woman alone, you know.
Yes, sure it is.
He bumps into a large Mexican painting.
Downstairs. Oh, excuse me.
I'm so sorry.
I've told Lolita 10 times to keep that in her room.
You have a maid living in the house?
Oh, Monsieur, Ramsdale is not Paris. And no, the colored girl comes 3 times a week. We think we're lucky to get her. But she does do shirts very well. Back here we have the kitchen. That's where we have our informal meals. My pastries win prizes around
Perhaps
here.
Perhaps if you'd let me have your telephone number, that would give me a chance to think it over.
1776.
1776. Declaration of Independence.
Yeah, so easy to remember. Oh, you must see the garden before you go. You must.
Outside, a nubile girl lounges in a bikini, sun hat, and sunglasses. A radio sits beside her.
My yellow roses, my daughter. Darling, turn that down, please.
He gapes at her.
I can offer you a comfortable home, a sunny garden, a congenial atmosphere, my cherry pies.
The pretty blonde Lolita slowly removes her sunglasses and studies Humbert.
We haven't discussed how much.
Oh, something nominal, let's say, 200 a month?
Yes, that's very...
Including meals and late snacks,
yes.
Etc.
That's very reasonable. Well, it's very nice.
You couldn't find better value in West Ramsdale.
Well, when would it be convenient for you to have me move in?
Well, right now. I mean, it would be silly for you to go to a hotel, monsieur.
Well, both my bags and the taxi. You're a very persuasive salesman, Mrs.
Thank
Hayes.
You. What was the decisive factor? My garden?
I think it was your cherry pies.
Oh.
Lolita's light eyes study them, a tiny smile playing on her full lips. Now a horror movie shows at a drive-in theater. In the white station wagon, Humbert sits between Charlotte Hayes and Lolita with his hands on his thighs. Watching the screen in fright, mother and daughter each grab one of his hands. He removes the one in Mrs. Hayes' grasp to pat and hold Lolita's. The girl places her other hand on top of his. As Mrs. Hayes reaches out to him again, she finds her daughter's fingers instead. They all quickly remove their hands from his leg. At home, Humbert and Mrs. Hayes sit before a chessboard. She has short, curly blonde hair and wears a tight dress that squeezes her shapely, plump figure.
Now, this is the one that goes back and forth.
Yes, that can leap over the other pieces.
Lolita approaches in her nightgown.
You're going to take my queen.
That was my intention, certainly.
The teenager leans against Humbert's chair.
Betty, bye, dear.
Good night.
She pecks her mother's cheek.
Good night.
Then Humbert's.
Good night, Leo.
She walks off. As he sneaks a glance at her sashaying hips, Mrs. Hayes moves her queen. Humbert turns back to the board.
Oh, well, that wasn't very clever of you.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Oh.
He takes her queen.
It had to happen sometime.
31, 32, 33.
Daytime. Humbert sits in the garden, reading a book. He peeks over the top to watch Lolita. 41, several feet away, the girl twirls a hula hoop around her hips. 45, 46, Mrs. Hayes comes out, snaps a picture of him with a camera, then smiles brightly.
See how relaxed you're getting?
Humbert glances away sheepishly. Now, in a school gymnasium decorated with streamers, elegantly attired couples crowd the floor. Nearby, a combo plays on a bandstand. Banners hanging from the rafters read Summer Dance and Ramsdale High School. In the crowd, Lolita dances in the arms of a fair-haired teenaged boy. She nods toward a buffet table.
Oh, there's Mother. Let's go say hello.
They approach Humbert and Charlotte.
Hi, Mom.
Oh, hello, darling. Oh, hello, Kenny.
Good evening, Mrs. Hayes.
Kenny, this is Mr. Humbert. Kenny Overton.
How do you do?
You having a good time?
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see then.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye.
Lolita and Kenny dance off.
Oh, aren't they adorable together?
Humbert winces, then turns to her with a smile.
I think tonight's the night.
Huh?
Well, Lolita told me that she's positive Kenny's going to ask her to go steady tonight.
She grins at him, then takes a bite of a hot dog. An attractive couple in their late 30s comes over.
Hello, Charlotte.
Jean, John, hello.
Hi, Humbert.
Blast, you got...
Sorry, we're late. I got held up in the court.
Oh.
Yeah, well, the prosecution brought in some new witnesses, you know. Well, I had to sit down with my client, make sure we were prepared for tomorrow morning.
John, can't you stop being a lawyer for just one night in the week?
Mind if I dance with your girl, Hum? We could sort of swap partners.
You're most welcome.
Well, this is what you get, because you won't dance.
She gives him her hot dog and leaves.
Hi, Humbert.
I'm sorry that I don't dance.
Oh, that's all right. I don't like dancing either very much. Did you
know that? Yeah.
You know, it's a funny thing, Humbert, but John and I, we first met at a dance, and I was sort of sitting it out, you know, and so he just sat it out, too.
Oh, that's very romantic.
Hi, Dad.
On the floor, John and Charlotte pass a young couple.
How you doing?
Fine.
Mike.
Humbert, don't tell Charlotte that I've told you this, will you? But did you know that you've had the most remarkable effect on her? Did you know that?
I have.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know it's none of my business, but, well, she's begun to radiate a certain glow.
I hardly think that has anything to do with me.
Humbert, when you get to know me better, you'll find I'm extremely broad-minded.
She eyes him coyly.
Yeah.
In fact, John and I were both broad-minded.
He frowns, puzzled. She gives him a gentle shove, then flashes a sexy smile. Humbert shrugs tightly. John and Charlotte approach.
Hey, you two, cut that out.
I'm so thirsty. Let's all have a little punch now, huh?
Oh, there aren't any more clean cups anymore.
I'll get some from another table.
Thank you, Humbert. Jean, your Mona looks simply enchanting in that cloud of pink. Oh, she's certainly becoming a mature young lady, isn't she?
Yes. Where does the time go? Do you know this summer she's going to be a junior counselor at camp?
No, that's simply wonderful. Are you sending her to that camp climax again?
Well, of course. We've done it every summer since she was 10.
It gives Jean and me a chance to catch up on our homework.
Across the room, Humbert goes to a table and ducks behind a floral centerpiece. He pushes a vase of flowers aside, then peeks out to spy on Lolita. The teenager dances with her date, Kenny. She has delicate features, a luminous smile, and a shapely figure. Nearby, Quilty dances with a tall, stylish woman. Bespectacled, he has dark hair, thin lips, and a Roman nose. She's decked out all in black with a bracelet coiled around her upper arm. As they dance with aloof, understated movements, he coolly checks his watch, then takes her into his arms. On the sidelines, teenagers approach three empty chairs. Charlotte, Jean, and John swoop down and take them instead.
Excuse me, kids.
tired.
Oh, my feet are killing me. Who is that? There.
She points out Quilty and his date, who has long black hair and bangs.
It's Claire Quilty. No, the TV writer.
Quilty suavely snaps his fingers as his date circles him.
Oh, I adored his play, The Lady Who Loved Lightning. Oh, it was marvelous.
Oh, excuse me, kids. I'm going to go over and say hello.
She fluffs her hair, removes her sheer stole, and rises. Approaching Quilty, Charlotte tries to tap him on the shoulder, but he takes a step forward. As the woman in black twirls out of his embrace, Mrs. Hayes quickly steps in. His partner backs away. Quilty stands somewhat stiffly as Mrs. Hayes dances around him. Quilty goes over to his date. Charlotte follows.
Oh, it's certainly been a long time.
Certainly has, yes.
Do you know that I've been the local authority on you ever since?
Is that so? Well, that's very sweet of you. Thank you so much.
I'll never forget that intellectually stimulating talk that you gave to our club.
Yes, magnificent club. Really magnificent. Tell me one thing. Are you a columnist?
No. Don't you remember? Well, that afternoon changed my whole life.
Oh. Oh. Well, how about that?
You remember?
She leans close and whispers in his ear. Listening intently, Quilty raises his eyebrows in a stunned expression.
Did I do that? Did I?
And wow. Afterwards, I showed you my garden, and I drove you to the airport.
Yes, really great fun. Listen, didn't you have a daughter? Didn't you have a daughter with a lovely name? Yeah, a lovely, what was it now? A lovely lyrical, lilting name like...
Lolita.
Lolita, that's right. Lolita, diminutive of Dolores, the tears and the roses.
Wednesday, she's going to have a cavity filled by your Uncle Ivor.
Yes. Yes.
Later, Lolita continues to dance with Kenny. Humbert watches them from a balcony. Charlotte comes over to him with a large slice of cake.
I've been looking all over for you.
I strolled around for a while, and then I came up here.
Oh, you poor man. I bet you're bored to tears.
On the contrary, I found it most interesting.
Charlotte, hello. I wonder if you found a place to sit down.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, Charlotte, Mona's having a little get-together later on at our house, and she and Freddie Beale and a couple of the other kids are having a jam session or whatever it's called. Anyhow, she wants to know if Lolita and Kenny can come.
Well, I don't see why not, as long as you have her home by midnight, huh?
Oh, but Charlotte, tonight's a special occasion. Why don't you have Lolita stay over with Mona? I mean, John can bring her back in the morning, can't you, John?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, now that would be too much trouble.
Oh, nonsense, the easiest thing in the world.
Not. Well,
it's settled. Well, I guess we'd better say goodnight to you two kids. John and I have to get home and kind of supervise things.
You know, what she means is keep the lights on.
Oh.
I think we ought to come over and help.
No, we wouldn't think of it, Humbert.
There's no trouble at all, is it, Charlotte?
Well, Jean, perhaps we should.
We're not doing anything else.
No.
They don't like too many grown-ups around.
That's right. Well, good night, Charlotte.
Good night, Jean.
No, good night. See
ya. Good night,
Humbert. Jean kisses his cheek.
Now, you don't want that. It'll spoil your appetite. We can go home now and have a cozy little dinner part too, huh?
Later at the house, Humbert cracks open a nut. Mrs. Hayes approaches in a tight-fitting leopard print gown.
I hope I didn't keep you waiting too long.
No, not at all, Liz.
I thought I'd change into something cozier.
It's charming.
You don't think it's... little too risque?
No, not at all. Charlotte, this may not be the right time or place.
Not another word. Until we finish our pink champagne, huh?
Well, in a sense, this is none of my business. But I've come to feel almost like a member of the family as far as Lolita is concerned.
Yes, I know, and I appreciate it. I've come to feel as if you were a member of the family, too.
I wonder if you aren't being too liberal with her.
Liberal? Oh, you dear man.
Oh, you dear, sweet, naive man.
No, I don't think you realize that she's beginning to grow up.
Oh, of course she's beginning to grow up. And it's only natural and healthy that she should take an interest in those fascinating creatures known as the opposite sex.
Bacteria. But should she be allowed to stay out all night?
She's not staying out. She's at Jean and John's.
Yes, but there's something about them that makes me wonder whether they would provide the right kind of supervision.
Oh, you're so charmingly old world. But then, that's what I adore about you. I have a proposal. What say you? I teach you some of the new steps, huh?
Oh, Charlotte, I don't even know the old ones. And you do this so very well, I'd much rather sit down and watch you. Very good.
Oh, come on. Oh, Humbert, what a thrillingly different name. Do you pronounce the surname differently? You know, in a slightly lower tone. I'll say, Humbert. What was that, the first or the second name?
Seriously, I am an awkward tripper and I have no sense of rhythm.
I refuse to believe that about you. Rhythm is so basic, and it just pours out of you. You simply vibrate rhythm.
Well, I'll clap my hands and you go on dancing.
Oh, now, come on, Humbert. That was not your surname. Now, put your hands here. Tighter.
He sets his hand on her waist.
Oh. All right. Ready, go. One, two, cha-cha-cha. One, two, cha-cha-cha. Oh, very good. Ah, une more joie de vie.
He guides her stiffly toward the dinner table.
You know, when you smile like that, you remind me of someone. Oh, a college boy I had a date with. I went dancing with him, a young blue-blooded Bostonian. Uh-huh. Oh, my very first glamour date. And you know, in certain lights, you remind me of Harold.
Oh, you mean the late Mr.?
Yes. Well, you're really very different, of course.
Yes, I imagine I am.
You know, I adored Harold. I really did. I swore at the time I would never marry again. And I don't think I will, but it wouldn't be fair to his memory, do you think?
No, one doesn't often find such loyalty these days.
But sometimes, Hum, I wonder...
She backs him against a wall.
Should life be for the living? What think you? You see, I'm a strongly emotional woman. Very strongly emotional.
She pulls him close.
Oh, don't be afraid of hurting me.
No, I'm not, really.
Now take me in your arms. Oh, I can't live in the past. Not anymore, Hum. Not anymore.
Lolita's in the foyer.
Hi.
Lolita.
Darling.
Lolita steps closer.
Cha-cha-cha.
Did you come back for something?
No, Mona's party turned out to be sort of a drag. So I thought I'd come back and see what you two are doing.
Well, we had a wonderful evening. Your mother created a magnificent spread. Did you have something to eat?
Oh, they served some kind of salty fish eggs, but I didn't like them.
Oh, well, I'll make you a sandwich. There's lots of food left over.
That's great. I'm starving.
I don't think she should be stuffing herself when she should go to sleep.
But, Mom, I'm hungry and I've got to have something to eat.
All right.
He leaves.
But you take it upstairs, and after you've eaten it, you go right to sleep.
Did you have a good time dancing with Claire Quilty?
Of course. He's a very erudite gentleman.
Yeah, I know. All the girls are crazy about him, too.
That's neither here nor there.
Since when?
Here we are. Excuse me. It's loaded with mayonnaise just the way you like it.
Thank you.
She sits.
Darling, take it upstairs.
I don't want to go to bed. It's too early.
We all think that Lo should go to bed.
I don't have to. This is a free country.
Which means there will be no allowance this week.
Which means I think you stink this week.
To bed this instant. I heard that.
Lolita marches up the steps.
Good night, Leo.
Reaching the landing, she shakes her head, then goes into her room.
Oh, that miserable little brat. She is becoming impossible. Simply impossible. The idea of her sneaking back here and spying on us.
I don't think she was spying on us.
Oh, really? What would you call it?
I'm sure she intended no harm.
Like hell she didn't. She's always been a spiteful little pest since the age of one. Do you know she kept throwing her toys out of her crib so that I would have to keep stooping over to pick them up? She has always had some kind of gripe against me. Now she sees herself as some kind of a starlet. Well, I see her as a sturdy, healthy, but decidedly homely child. I mean, is it my fault if I feel young? Why should my child resent it? You don't resent it, do you? Do you think that I'm just a foolish, romantic American girl?
No.
Why don't I throw on a wrap and we can go out for a little ride in the car, huh?
Well, it's a little late, Charlotte.
Well, let's at least finish our champagne, shall we?
I've had a very exhausting evening. I think I'd best go to bed.
But it's not even one.
My neuralgia is about to strike with heartburn, an old ally. And good night. And thank you for a charming evening.
You're very welcome.
Starting up the steps, he nods to her, then heads upstairs. Charlotte stares after him with a forlorn glance. As she clutches her wrap, gloves, and purse in one hand, and the bottle of champagne and his discarded nutshells in the other, her face slowly crumples. She dumps the champagne bottle into an ice bucket, then drops his shells on a tray. Daytime. Humbert writes in a diary.
What drives me insane is the twofold nature of this nymphet, of every nymphet, perhaps. This mixture in my Lolita of tender, dreamy childishness and a kind of eerie vulgarity. I know it is madness to keep this journal, but it gives me a strange thrill to do so. And only a loving wife could decipher my microscopic script.
In the kitchen, Charlotte lifts eggs out of a pan and onto a plate. At the table, Lolita pours milk and sugar into a bowl of cereal.
Miss, in this house, we do not eat with the table on the elbows on the tables. Must you pamper your pimples?
She takes the sugar.
Do you mind if I eat? Got to meet Mona.
Oh, this morning you have to meet Mona. Last night... First, you wash every dish, then you go upstairs and you make your bed and you clean up your room. I am not picking up after you today, miss, or any day.
Charlotte saunters out with breakfast on her tray. Lolita reaches for the phone. Charlotte snatches it.
Hello? Excuse me.
Is it Kenny?
No. Just a minute. Jean, just a second. Take this tray up to Professor Humbert and do not disturb him. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am.
Jean, I'm very glad you called. Yes? Oh, Mona? What time? Well, I'm very glad you called me, Jean.
Lolita eats the bacon off Humbert's plate while she takes the tray to his bedroom door.
That's a good idea. Well, I'd rather not disturb.
Who is it?
Lolita.
Come in.
As she enters, he shuts his diary.
Here's your breakfast.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
Good morning.
He puts the diary into a drawer, then locks it.
Don't tell Mom, but I ate all your bacon.
You have a very long face today.
Oh, yeah?
Nibbling on a piece of his toast, she makes a face.
What were you writing?
I was writing, poem.
Mm-hmm. And what's it about?
It's about people.
Hmm.
She tries the drawer.
It's a novel subject. You know, it's funny. It sort of looked like a diary when I came in.
I always write my poems in a diary. It's one of my little idiosyncrasies.
Hmm. Afraid somebody's gonna steal your ideas and sell them to Hollywood, huh?
Perhaps. Would you like me to read you some poetry?
Sure, why not?
This is my favorite poet.
He opens a book.
It was the Divine Edgar.
Who's the Divine Edgar? Edgar who?
Edgar Allan Poe, of course. Mm. It was night in the lonesome October of my most immemorial year. Notice how he emphasizes this word. It was hard by the dim lake of Ulba in the misty mid-region of Weir. You see, he takes a word like dim in one line and twists it, you see? And comes back as mid-region of Weir.
Mid-region. And twist it to dim. That's pretty good. Pretty clever.
Thus I pacified Psyche and kissed her and conquered her scruples and gloom, and we passed to the end of the vista, but were stopped by the door of a tomb. And I said, "What is written, sweet sister?" She replied, "Ulalum, ulalum."
Well, I think it's a little corny, to tell you the truth.
Oh? What do you object to?
Well, the vista system. That's like Lolita Sweeter.
That's very true. That's a very acute observation. If you were in my class, I would give you an A+. Tell me, was Mona Farlow annoyed when you left her party last night?
Mona? Annoyed?
Well, I thought she might be looking forward to...
Don't worry about Mona.
Uh-huh.
Let me tell you something about Mona.
Do please.
No, I better not tell you. You'll blab.
I will never give away any of your secrets.
You wouldn't?
I promise.
Oh. Well, for that, you get a little reward.
Oh, thank you very much.
Here.
Oh, no, please, no.
She picks up one of his fried eggs.
No.
Put your head back.
He does.
Open your mouth. You can have one little bite.
He grabs her hand and bites a mouthful.
Lolita!
Charlotte stands at the bottom of the steps.
Lolita! Come down here!
Lolita comes to the landing.
What do you want?
Firstly, when I call you, I want you to come right down and not make me holler for you from room to room.
Yes, ma'am.
Secondly, I want you to go right into your room and put on a dress. I'm going to the Farlows, and I want you to come with me.
But I'm supposed to meet Mona at the lake.
And lastly, I forbid you to disturb Professor Humbert again. He is a writer, and he is not to be disturbed.
Sieg Heil.
Later, Charlotte rings a dinner bell as she sits with Humbert.
You know, I have a glorious surprise for us.
One of your dramatic suites?
Mm-mm. Guess again.
A maid enters with a coffee pot.
The Farlows have been arrested.
Oh, really, hum. Thank you, Louise.
I'm no good at guessing.
He lights her cigarette.
Mona Farlow is leaving for summer camp tomorrow. Lolita is going with her. You were absolutely right last night when you warned me that I was getting too liberal with her about boys. What's more, Mona disappeared from that party last night, and she did not come home till 4 a.m. So Jean and I decided that isolation from boys would be the best thing for both of the girls this crucial summer.
Yes. Do you think that the camp is the answer?
Oh, frankly, hum, I do. And it's all arranged. The Farlows and I phoned the camp long distance. And I did all...
He puts a hand to his cheek.
Is something the matter with your face?
Toothache.
Oh, you poor man. If it still pains you tomorrow, I'll call and arrange an appointment.
How far away is this camp?
200 miles. It was a stroke of genius on Mama's part. Oh, ain't I clever?
He smiles awkwardly.
Shall we take our coffee out to the piazza? Or do you want to go upstairs and nurse that tooth?
His hand jerks toward his face.
That's the tooth.
Daytime. Through the parted curtains of a bedroom window, we spy the maid, Louise, loading two suitcases into the back of the station wagon. Charlotte climbs into the front seat as Lolita lingers outside the car. Upstairs, Humbert lies asleep in bed. He lifts the covers off his face. Brow furrowed, he blinks several times, then sits up. Dressed only in boxer shorts, he rises and reaches for a dressing gown hanging on a nearby hook. He puts it on and peeks out the window. On the driveway below, Lolita glances up at Humbert's window.
I'll be right back.
Entering the house, she rushes up the steps. Humbert stands on the second floor landing. Lolita runs into his embrace.
Well, I guess I won't be seeing you again, huh?
I shall be moving on. I must prepare for my work at Beardsley College in the fall.
Then I guess this is goodbye.
Yes.
Don't forget me.
She winks, then dashes back down the steps. Humbert rests his hands on the railing and slowly leans over it. He stares after Lolita, following her with his eyes all the way to the front door. His mouth hangs agape for a moment. He presses his lips together and turns away from the staircase. Humbert clasps his hands and paces uncertainly, then strolls into Lolita's bedroom. Magazine cutouts of handsome teen idols adorn the walls. A Ramsdale High banner hangs above her four-poster bed. Humbert drops onto the neatly made bed, fingers her pillow, then presses his face into it. Outside, Louise waves goodbye as the station wagon pulls off. It heads past a picket fence, turns onto the street, and drives away. Back inside, Humbert's back heaves with a deep sigh as he lies slumped against Lolita's pillow.
Are you upstairs, Mr. Humbert? Mr. Humbert?
He slowly sits up and tries to compose himself. Humbert straightens his shoulders as Louise enters with an envelope.
Mrs. Hayes asked me to give you this.
Thank you very much.
As she leaves, he glances at the front of the envelope, then opens it. As he takes out a letter and starts to peruse it, his brow creases slightly.
This is a confession. I love you. Last Sunday in church, my dear one, when I asked the Lord what to do about it, I was told to act as I am acting now. You see, there is no alternative. I have loved you from the minute I saw you. I am a passionate and lonely woman, and you are the love of my life. Now you know. So you will please at once pack and leave. This is a landlady's order. I am dismissing a lodger. I am kicking you out. Go, scram, departez. I shall be back by dinner time. I do not wish to find you in the house, you see. Cherie, if you decided to stay, if I found you at home, which I know I won't, and that's why I'm able to go on like this, the fact of your remaining would only mean one thing, that you... that you want me as much as I do you, as a lifelong mate. And you are ready to link up your life with mine forever and ever and be a father to my little girl. Goodbye, dear one. Pray for me. If you ever pray.
Humbert collapses onto the bed. On the wall above Lolita's nightstand hangs a cigarette ad featuring Claire Quilty. He sits at a typewriter with a cunning, impish grin. Fade to black. Now Charlotte lies alone in a double bed with rumpled sheets. She reaches out to the pillow beside her and finds it's empty. Lifting her head off her own pillow, she glances around. She sits up and runs a hand through her hair. Rising, she steps into high-heeled mules.
Come, baby!
Humbert writes in his diary.
The wedding was a quiet affair. And when called upon to enjoy my promotion from lodger to lover, did I experience only bitterness and distaste? No. Mr. Humbert confesses to a certain titillation of his vanity. to some faint tenderness, even to a pattern of remorse, daintily running along the steel of his conspiratorial dagger.
Dear, the door is locked.
Mm-hmm. She stands outside the bathroom.
Sweetheart, I don't want any secrets between us. It makes me feel insecure.
Can't this wait till I come out of here?
I suppose.
She drops into a chair outside the door. In the bathroom, he sits on a stool.
Hum, what are you doing there so long? I want to talk to you.
I haven't been here long. In point of fact, I only just came in.
Were there a lot of women in your life before me?
I've told you about them already.
Well, you didn't tell me about all of them.
Charlotte, if it would make you any happier, I will sit right down and I will make out a complete list of every woman I have ever known. Would that satisfy you?
I'm lonesome. I think it's healthy for me to be jealous. It means that I love you. You know how happy I can make you.
Charlotte, I haven't even had my morning cup of coffee yet.
You want me to make you some?
Please do that, like a good little wife.
All right.
Her eyes filled with woe, the new Mrs. Humbert rises. In the bathroom, her husband puts his ear to the door, then slowly opens it and steps out. The hallway's empty. Carrying his diary, he tiptoes into his old bedroom. Suddenly, Charlotte bursts in.
Darling.
Humbert hides his diary in his desk.
I don't care about any other woman. I know that our love is sacred. The others were profane.
Yes, sacred. That's right. That's what it is.
Oh, Hum.
He leads her out.
Hum, baby, you know I love the way you smell. Oh, you do arouse the pagan in me. Hum, you just touch me and I go as limp as a noodle. It scares me.
Emergency Management Agency. This station is participating in a required monthly test of the Illinois Emergency Alert System. This system was developed to provide information to the public during emergencies. This was a test.
I think I would commit suicide.
Hey, a gun.
It belonged to Mr. Hayes.
You should be careful with those things.
It's not loaded.
That's what they all say. I didn't know it was loaded.
This is a sacred weapon. It's a tragic treasure.
She returns to the bed.
Mr. Hayes purchased it when he found out he was ill. He wanted to spare me the sight of his suffering. Happily or unhappily, he was hospitalized before he could use it.
You put it down, please. Thank you. That's better now, isn't it, huh?
Mm-hmm. Kissing her, he rolls on top and stares at a photo of Lolita on her nightstand.
Oh, you man. Oh, darling, you know, I have a most ambitious fantasy.
What's yours?
I would love to get hold of a real French servant girl. You know, like the German girls the fathers had. And have her come and live in the house.
No room.
We could put her in Lowe's room. I've been meaning to make a guest room out of that hole anyway.
And where, pray, will you put your daughter? When you get your guest or your maid?
You know, I've decided to send her straight from camp to a good boarding school.
You know, with strict religious training. And then on to college. Oh, darling, it's going to be you and me alone. Forever.
His eyes grow wide. Holding him close, she shuts her eyes for a moment, smiles, and gives him a gentle squeeze.
Darling, you've gone away.
Just a minute, I'm following a train of thought.
His eyes shift from Lolita's picture to Charlotte's face. Humbert winces slightly, rolls off his wife, and lies against a pillow with his back to her. She leans against him.
Oh, it doesn't matter.
She playfully bites his shoulder.
C'est la vie.
Gripping the pillow, he scowls.
Hey, am I on that train?
Yes.
I should hope so. That's lovely, huh?
He shuts his eyes.
Uh-oh.
She rolls over to the telephone.
Hello? Yes, this is Mrs. Charlotte Humbert. I'll accept the charges. It's Lolita. She's calling long distance. Hello? Hello, dear. We're fine. Yes? We spent the honeymoon on Hourglass Lake. Well, with a few other young marrieds. Is anything wrong? You lost your new sweater? In the woods? Yes, he's here. What do you want to thank him for? Candy. Just a minute. I really wish that you would not send her candy without consulting me. Hum, I'm talking to you.
He sits up, glaring.
Even in the most harmonious household such as ours, not all the decisions are taken by the female. Especially when the male partner has fulfilled his obligations beyond the line of duty. When you wanted me to spend my afternoon sunbathing by the lake, I was glad to become the bronze glamour boy for your sake instead of remaining the scholar. Even then, I scoot along after you like an obliging little lapdog. Oh, yes, I'm happy, I'm delighted to be bossed by you, but every game has its rules.
Charlotte throws the receiver at him, grabs a bathrobe, and marches out. Humbert watches her go, then puts the phone to his ear.
Lolita.
He slams the receiver back into its cradle. His shoulders heave with a sigh. Humbert swings his feet over the side of the bed and onto the floor. He reaches for the bottle of whiskey resting on his nightstand, unscrews the cap, and takes a swig. Downing a huge gulp, Humbert pulls a slipper onto one of his feet. Then he bends over and fishes under the bed for the other slipper. As he starts to put it on, he places the whiskey back on the nightstand and notices the pistol beside it. Humbert peers into the chambers. They're loaded. He slowly straightens up, glances toward the open doorway, then back at the revolver. He picks it up, fiddles with the cylinder, and opens it up. Humbert turns the gun upside down. The bullets tumble out of their chambers and onto the carpet. He picks them up, then gazes into space.
No man can bring about the perfect murder. Chance, however, can do it.
He holds up one of the bullets.
Just minutes ago, she had said it wasn't loaded. What if I had playfully pulled the trigger then?
He starts to reload the gun.
She said it wasn't loaded. It belonged to the late Mr. Hayes. She was having her morning tub. We had just finished talking about our plans for the future. I decided to play a practical joke and pretend I was a burglar. We were newlyweds and still did things like that to each other. As soon as it happened, I called an ambulance, but it was too late. Simple, isn't it? The perfect murder.
Humbert glances furtively at the doorway and purses his lips. He loads the final bullet and snaps the cylinder shut. His wedding ring gleams as he gently holds the pistol with both hands. Eyeing the gun, he slides his index finger around the trigger. Humbert points the pistol outward, rises, and walks to the door. He pauses to hide the gun behind his back, then steps into the hall and starts toward the bathroom. Through the cracked open door, we spy steam rising from the bathtub as hot water pours from the faucet.
She splashed in the tub, a trustful, clumsy seal. And all the logic of passion screamed in my ear. Now is the time. But what do you know, folks? I just couldn't make myself do it. The scream grew more and more remote, and I realized the melancholy fact that neither tomorrow nor Friday, nor any other day or night, could I make myself put her to death.
He uncocks the hammer and pockets the gun in his dressing gown. Staring at his empty hands, he blinks in confusion and wrinkles his brow.
Shall I?
Pushing the door all the way open, he finds the bathroom deserted. Charlotte's abandoned robe lies across a stool. Humbert peeks into Lolita's room. Then enters his former bedroom.
Darling.
His wife sits, reading his diary.
Darling.
He wags his finger at her.
It's my diary. We don't read other people's diaries, do we? Charlotte, that's my diary. Give it to me, please.
She swats him over the head with it.
Please, please, please. No.
The Hayes woman. The cow. The obnoxious mama. The brainless baba. Well, the stupid Hayes is no longer your dupe.
Give me that book, please. Give it to me, please.
Scream out the window!
Quiet. Now, let's discuss this. Let's sit down and discuss it quietly like civilized
people. You're a monster. You're a disgusting, despicable, loathsome criminal!
No, don't do that.
Get out of my way. Get out of my way. No, I'm getting out of here. No. Go on. Get out of my way. I'm leaving here today. You can have all of it. But you are never going to see that miserable brat again!
She goes into the master bedroom and locks the door.
Charlotte, open the door. I want to speak to you. This is so easy to explain. It's a hallucination. You're crazy, Charlotte. I get you a drink. That's what you want, a nice little drink.
She eyes Mr. Hayes's urn.
Harold, look what happened. I was disloyal to you. I couldn't help it, though. 7 years is a very long time. Why did you go and die on me? I didn't know anything about life. I was very young. If you hadn't died, all this wouldn't have happened.
She hurls the diary aside and hugs the urn.
Oh, darling, forgive me. Forgive me.
Cradling it in her arms, she presses her lips to the lid and rocks back and forth.
You were the soul of integrity. How did we produce such a little beast? I promise you that I'll know better next time. Next time it's going to be somebody you'll be very proud of. Harold.
She drops to the floor. Downstairs, Humbert enters the kitchen, carrying bottles of alcohol, a martini shaker, and glasses.
Charlotte! Those notes you found were fragments of a novel that I'm writing.
He sets everything down, then takes an ice tray out of the freezer.
Your name and Lolita's were put in by mere chance, just because they were handy.
He puts the tray in the sink and runs water over it.
That's the way novelists work. They think of the names of their friends and the people who enter into their daily life, like the Fowlers. And they think up funny situations. I'm making a martini for you.
He fumbles with the ice tray, then brings it over to a counter where the alcohol shaker and glasses sit.
Charlotte! I'll take it!
He runs into the hall.
Yes. Yes, this is he. Yes. What? But my wife is upstairs in her bedroom. Is this a gag? Is this one of the fellas at the country club? Yeah, just hold on, please. Charlotte! There's a man on the line who says that you're being hit by a car. Now listen, please, my friend. Just hold on one moment.
He hurries to the front door, which swings open, then closed, and peeks out a window. Opening the door, he throws on a trench coat, dashes into the pouring rain, and runs barefoot down the driveway. At the sidewalk's edge, he finds a sedan halfway up the curb. An older man sits on the curb with a dazed expression. In the street, a body lies, covered with a raincoat. A woman snaps a picture of it as an ambulance pulls up.
Take it easy.
A short man approaches Humbert.
Mr. Humbert, she just ran right in front of me. I swerved around, you see, to avoid hitting the dog, and she just ran right in front of me. Look, my dad's in a state of shock. I gotta look after her, but I just wanted you to know it isn't my fault.
A paramedic.
Are you the lady's husband?
Humbert nods.
I'm afraid she's dead.
Humbert steps out of the way as the paramedics bring a stretcher to the body. Later, the professor lies in a bathtub filled to the rim. Water sloshes around his neck as a whiskey glass rests on his hairy chest. He gulps down the drink.
Humbert? Humbert?
It's Jean and John.
He sits up, draws a shower curtain halfway across the tub, then sits back, puffing out his cheeks.
Humbert, where are you?
They approach the open door.
Oh!
Jean turns away.
Yeah, it's all right. Come in, both of you. Jean, I'm perfectly
decent. It's all right.
Look, there's a stool.
She sits with her back to the tub.
You poor man.
Just have to hang on.
She was a wonderful person. Humbert. She was always so gay, wasn't she, John?
Just remember, I mean, it's always darkest before the dawn.
That's very, very true. It's just wonderful to have friends at a time like...
They spot the pistol lying on top of his dressing gown.
Now, see here, old man.
John sits on the toilet across from Humbert.
You mustn't think of doing anything rash.
Why, of course not. You have everything to live for, hasn't he, John?
Perhaps you better tell him about Charlotte's kidney.
Yes. Humbert, Charlotte didn't want anybody to know this, but she hadn't long to live anyhow.
She only had one kidney.
Yes.
Born that way.
That's right. And the one kidney she had was distressed.
She had
nephritis.
Nephritis.
Yes.
I'll get it.
Humbert. Try to think of your poor little Lolita, all alone in the world. You must live for her sake.
John returns with an older man.
Oh, excuse me.
No, that's all right. Come in, please.
I'm Frederick Beale, Sr.
Oh.
May I talk to you for a moment?
Do, please.
My son was driving the car.
When that thing happened?
Yes. You know, my two youngest, Jack and Mary, are in the same grade as your Lolita.
He's had a terrible shock.
Yes, of course he has. You know, this isn't easy to talk about, but technically, it was the pedestrian's fault, not the driver.
Technically, you're absolutely right.
You see, it was raining, and she ran across the road.
Well, you don't have to explain to me, because I have no quarrel with you.
Well, I must say you're wonderfully sympathetic. In fact, you've been so generous about the whole matter. I was about to suggest that maybe you'd allow me to pay the funeral expenses.
Oh, that's awfully nice of you. Thank you very much.
Well, that's the least I can do. It's my pleasure. Well, I won't keep you any longer. We'll have to get together very soon and sort out the details.
Yes, let's do that. Yes.
Now the white station wagon drives down a highway. Later, it goes through a toll booth. And later still, it rolls onto a ferry. Driving down a dirt road, the car passes a sign. Camp Climax for girls. Drive carefully. Teenagers file past on horseback. Later, in the camp office, two girls run a printing press while another types. Three pretty ones wander in, two in skimpy shorts, the third in a bathing suit. As the girls saunter past Humbert, he stares after them, patting a tennis racket into the palm of his hand. A young man with a crew cut swaggers in, carrying a load of linen. He dumps it onto a desk, then eyes Humbert. The older man crosses his arms over his chest.
Do you work here?
Yeah, sort of.
I didn't think you were a camper.
No.
This is a girls' camp exclusively, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm Charlie, Mr. Sedgwick's son.
Oh. You visit the place, I suppose, from time to time.
No, I live here.
Oh, are you the only boy living in the camp?
The only one.
Do you know a girl called Lolita? Dolores Hayes?
Oh, yeah, yeah, I know her.
Well?
Well, I see her around once in a while.
Oh.
Hi, Ma.
Charlie, what are those sheets doing there? You know they belong in the laundry room. She's almost packed, Dr. Humbert. We haven't told her anything.
Poor man.
Terrible thing.
Later in the car.
Okay, what's the big mystery bit? Why do those girls look at me so funny?
Oh, there's no mystery. It's just that I didn't want to talk in front of your friends at the camp. It's your mother.
Really? She giving me time off for good behavior or something?
No, she hasn't been feeling very well.
What's the matter with her?
She's sick.
Really? What is it?
The doctors don't seem to know quite what the trouble is. She's been moved to a hospital in the country, near Leppingsville.
A hospital? Well, is that where we're going now, is Leppingsville?
Yes, eventually. And then, of course, you and I will have to bide our time until your mother gets well. And after that, I thought we might go to the mountains for a while. Does that appeal to you?
Well, what's the routine? Are we going home now or what?
No, dear. We should be in Bryceland by dinner time, and I've no doubt that we shall find some comfortable hotel to spend the night, and then tomorrow morning we'll press on towards Leppingsville.
Lolita studies him carefully.
Did you have a marvelous summer?
Yeah, I guess so.
Sorry to leave?
Not exactly.
Seated behind the wheel, Humbert smiles at her, then turns back to the road. In the front seat beside him, Lolita slowly looks him up and down while chewing gum.
You know, I've missed you terribly.
I haven't missed you. In fact, I've been revoltingly unfaithful to you. But it doesn't matter a bit, because you've stopped caring anyway.
Well, what makes you say I've stopped caring for you?
Well, you haven't even kissed me yet, have you?
The car speeds off. Nighttime. In a hotel lobby, Claire Quilty, wearing a camera around his neck, strolls up to the front desk with his black-clad companion, Vivian.
Hello, Mr. Swine.
Hello, Mr. Quilty. Good evening, ma'am. Well, did you get any good pictures today?
Yeah. Great. I'm having a swell vacation.
Good.
Mr. Swine, do you mind if I ask you a sort of personal question?
Sure, go ahead.
What is a guy like you doing in a job like this?
What do you mean?
Well, you just don't seem to be the type.
Well, as a matter of fact, I was an actor.
I know it. Didn't I say to you? When I first saw you, there's something about your sort of aura that all actors and actresses have.
Well, since you're a playwright, maybe you could use me sometime, hmm?
Yeah, maybe I could use you sometime. Now, Mr. Swine, what does an actor-manager do with his spare time in a small town like this?
Well, I don't have much spare time, but I swim, play tennis, lift weights, get rid of the excess energy. What do you do with your excess energy?
Well, we do a lot of things with my excess energy. I tell you, one of the things we do a lot of, that's judo. Did you ever hear about that?
Judo?
Mm.
Yes, I've heard about it.
Yeah.
You do judo with the lady?
Yeah, she's a yellow belt. I'm a green belt. That's the way nature made it. What happens is she throws me all over the place.
She throws you all over the place?
Yes, what she does, she gets me in a sort of thing called a sweeping ankle throw. She sweeps my ankles away from under me. I go down with one hell of a bang.
Doesn't it hurt?
Well, I sort of lay there in pain, but I love it. I really love it. I lay there hovering between consciousness and unconsciousness. It's really the greatest.
Nearby, Lolita and Humbert step through the entrance.
Wow. This looks swank.
As they approach, Quilty and Vivian step to the side.
See you later.
Okay.
Good evening.
Good evening, sir. Can I help you?
Yes, I'd like a room with a bath. Or rather, two rooms with baths.
Oh, did you have a reservation, Mr.?
Humbert is the name. No, I have no reservation.
Well, I'm afraid it would be impossible to accommodate you. This convention's got us tied up in knots.
Oh.
Is it just you and the girl?
Yes, I would like you to accommodate us because we're retired.
Mr. Potts.
Yes, Mr. Swine.
What about Captain Love? Is he called?
Oh, he's canceled his reservation.
Well, I could give you 242. It's a lovely room, but it's only got one bed.
Well, perhaps you can find a folding bed or a camp bed.
Potts, do we have any cots?
No, the troopers have snapped them all up.
Well, I'm sure you would find one room satisfactory. Our double beds are really triple. One night we had three ladies sleeping in one.
I'm sure we will manage. Even if my wife joins me later, we'll manage even then, I'm sure.
Good. Would you mind registering?
Certainly.
Quilty and Vivian eavesdrop.
By the way, what sort of a convention are you holding here?
We are very proud to have the overflow of the state police convention.
Humbert grimaces. He quickly lowers his head and continues signing the guest book. A little later, a bellhop shows Humbert and Lolita to their room. Carrying four suitcases, the bellhop opens the door and they enter. There's a double bed in the middle of the room.
Perhaps if you just left them on the floor.
The bellhop starts to place them on a stand.
Oh. Well, you can just... Yes, we are.
Humbert tips him.
Thank you very much. Oh.
Thank you, sir.
With a nod, he leaves, shutting the door behind him.
Well.
Is, this it?
You mean,
They eye the bed.
Yeah.
Well, yes. But, see, I'm quite sure that they will manage to find a cot for us. I asked them downstairs in the lobby to find a cot.
A cot?
Yes.
You're crazy.
Why, my darling?
Because, my darling, when my darling mother finds out, she's going to divorce you and strangle me.
Yes, now look, now. I have a great feeling of... tenderness for you. And while your mother is ill, I'm responsible for your welfare. We are not rich, and while we travel, we shall be obliged. We shall be thrown a good deal together. Now, two people sharing one room inevitably enter into kind of, how shall I say, kind of,
She kicks off her shoes.
Aren't you going to go down to see about the cot?
She turns away. A little later, Humbert paces in the lobby with a brandy glass in one hand. Quilty and Vivian lounge in nearby chairs. Humbert eyes his watch, then goes over to a heavyset man who sits behind the front desk.
Has there been a message for me from my wife?
I'm sorry, sir, nothing yet. But we're working on that cut.
Oh, thank you.
As Humbert turns toward the couple, Quilty raises a newspaper to hide them behind it. Under the cover of the funny pages, Quilty exchanges a long, intense look with his companion. Humbert strolls up, takes a sip of his brandy, and turns away, never noticing the pair. When the professor heads out, Quilty lowers the paper and watches him go. Outside, Humbert steps onto a terrace and checks his watch again. He gazes into the distance, then sits in a wicker chair. A second later, Quilty comes out. He walks over to a railing, quickly removes his glasses, and stares into the night.
Hello. Hello.
Oh, you're addressing me.
Yeah.
I thought perhaps there was someone with you.
No, I'm not really with someone. I'm with you. I didn't mean that as an insult. What I really meant was that I'm with the state police here, and when I'm with them, I'm with someone, but right now I'm on my own. I mean, I'm not with a lot of people, just you.
Well, I wouldn't like to disturb you. I'll leave you alone if you prefer it.
No, you don't really have to go at all. I like it, you know, because I don't know what it is. I sort of get the impression that you want to leave, but you don't like to leave because maybe you think I think it looks suspicious, me being a policeman and everything.
Oh, yes.
You don't have to think that because I haven't really got a suspicious mind at all. I look suspicious myself. A lot of people think I'm suspicious, especially when I stand around on street corners. One of our own boys picked me up the other week. He thought I looked a bit too suspicious standing on a street corner and everything. Tell me something. I couldn't help noticing when you checked in tonight. It's part of my job. I notice human individuals, and I notice your face. I said to myself when I saw you, I said, that's a guy with the most normal-looking face I ever saw in my life.
That's very nice of you to say that.
Not a bit, not a bit. It's great to see a normal face, because I'm a normal guy. It'd be great for two normal guys like us to get together and talk about world events, you know, in a normal sort of way.
Well, there's nothing I would like better than that, but I don't have much time.
Oh, it's a pity, because may I say one other thing to you? It's really on my mind. I've been thinking about it quite a lot. I noticed when you was checking in, you had a lovely, pretty little girl with you. She was really lovely. As a matter of fact, she wasn't so little, come to think of it. She was a fairly tall little... Well, I mean, taller than little, you know what I mean? But she was really lovely. I wish I had a lovely, pretty tall, lovely little girl like that. I mean...
It's, well, that was my daughter.
Your daughter? Gee, isn't it great to have a lovely, tall, pretty, little, small daughter like that? It's really wonderful. I don't have any children or boys or little, tall girls or anything. I'm not even... Are you married?
Yes, I'm expecting my wife perhaps to come here.
May I say something? I thought you was looking a little uneasy at the desk there, and maybe I was thinking that you want to get away from your wife for a little while. I don't blame you. If I was married, I'd take every opportunity to get away from my wife.
Yes. No, that was not it at all. As a matter of fact, it's quite possible that my wife would not join me, because when I left home, she was not very well.
Oh, gee, what was the matter with your wife?
Well, it's nothing. She had an accident.
Oh, gee, she had an accident. It's really terrible. I mean, fancy a fella's wife having a normal guy, his wife having an accident like that. What happened to her?
She was hit by a car.
Gee, no wonder she's not here. Gee, you must feel pretty bad about that. What's happening? Is she coming on later or something?
Well, that was the understanding.
What, in an ambulance? Gee, I'm sorry. I shouldn't say that. I get sort of carried away, you know, being so normal and everything. Tell me, when you were standing there at the desk checking in with the night manager, Mr. George Swine, who I happen to know is a personal friend of mine, I was wondering if he fixed you up with sort of good accommodation here.
Yes, they were extremely cooperative.
You're quite sure about that? Because, I mean, I could really easily have a word with George Schwein. I mean, he's a really normal, nice sort of guy, and I've only got to have a normal word in his ear, and you'd be surprised what things could happen from a thing like that. I mean, he'd probably go and turn some of the troopers out so you could have a lovely room, a bridal suite for you and your lovely little girl.
No, please, I don't want you to take any trouble on my account. We're perfectly comfortable.
But he should do it. It's his job to fix you up with something nice. I mean, you know, he gets paid for doing that thing, and I mean, when he sees a guy like you coming in all normal and everything with a lovely little girl beside him, he should say to himself, gee, I gotta give that guy a lovely, sort of comfortable, foamy bed to sleep in. I mean, you know, I just don't like to hear things like that happening, because I could go over and really take a swipe at him for not giving you a lovely, comfortable, sleepy movie star bed. You know what I mean? I mean, you know, what has he got you, on the floor or something?
Well, the little girl is probably asleep already in the bed, and, well, really, I don't know why we're discussing this, because...
Listen, why don't you let me have a look at the accommodation that you have now and really take it in for a second, then I can come down and have a word with George Swine. It would be so simple.
No, you really shouldn't worry about either of us.
You know, you can ask me...
I think that I should go upstairs.
You're going because you maybe think that me being a policeman and everything, I think you're sort of suspicious. I don't think that at all. I think you're really normal and everything. I don't have to go because of that.
No, it's been very nice talking to you.
Yeah, listen, before you go, I was wondering whether maybe in the morning, you know, me being lonely and normal and everything...
No,
maybe
we shall
like
have to get up at the crack of dawn.
Breakfast with me, perhaps. Would you like
it's
that?
It's very nice of you, but...
I can arrange that with George Swain, the night manager. You could have it laid out already.
Well, thank you so much. Good night.
You have a most interesting face. Good night.
Humbert heads back inside. Moments later, he spots the bellhop outside his room.
Shh. Oh, good evening, sir. I brought the cot, sir.
Yes, I see you did. We don't really need it now, so I'll soon take it away.
You don't need the cot.
No, she's asleep, you
see. I won't make any noise.
No, that's not the point, exactly.
I know, but two of the troopers agreed to double up, sir. That's how I got the cot, sir.
Well, in that case, all right, bring it in. But no noise, please. Yes, quietly.
Humbert unlocks the door and opens it. The bellhop follows him into the room, rolling the cot, a twin mattress on a steel frame that's folded in half. Humbert glances at the double bed where Lolita soundly sleeps. The bellhop pushes the cot toward the foot of the bed, in front of the four suitcases on the stand. Humbert and the bellhop look over the cot, trying to figure out how to unfold it. Finding a latch, the bellhop undoes it, then tries to straighten out the mattress. The short, balding man struggles under the weight of the cot. He slips, banging Humbert in the shin. Lolita continues to sleep, unaware of the activity nearby. Together, Humbert and the bellhop attempt to unfold the cot. Humbert takes the foot, the bellhop takes the head. But the cot sticks halfway open, forming a V-shape. When the bellhop presses his weight down on the head, the foot flies into the air and out of Humbert's grip. The professor tries to lower that end, which knocks the bellhop off his feet and onto the mattress. Trying to stand, he kicks over one of the suitcases. As the bellhop rises, the foot of the cot shoots upward again. Eyeing Lolita, Humbert gestures for the bellhop to be quiet. He reaches for the suitcase and sets it back on the stand. The bellhop removes his jacket, then turns back to the cot. On their next attempt, the bellhop again takes the head and Humbert grabs the foot. The professor presses down hard, sending the head sticking upward. Taking another approach, Humbert kneels on the foot of the cot. He slips and flops across the mattress, straightening it out.
We did it, sir.
Holding up his hand, Humbert gestures for the bellhop to quiet down, then carefully rises off the cot. The bellhop fixes the rumpled sheets a little and puts his jacket back on. Humbert digs into his pocket, takes out several bills, and tips the bellhop. The man nods gratefully.
Thank you, sir.
Humbert shows him to the door. Lolita's chest heaves as she continues to sleep. Later, Lolita sleeps alone in the bedroom of the hotel suite. Humbert opens the bathroom door and lingers on the threshold, wearing pajamas and a robe. He shuts off the bathroom light, then approaches the double bed where his stepdaughter lies. Moonlight peeks through a window's blinds, throwing striped shadows onto her pretty face. As she sleeps on the far side of the bed, he creeps up to the other side. Humbert eyes her with a cautious look, then nods resolutely. He very slowly turns back the covers and gently folds them down. Leaning closer and closer, he manages to get one of his knees up onto the mattress. With his eyes glued to her sleeping form, he attempts to slip under the sheets beside her. Lolita stirs and turns toward him.
Hello. Where did the cot came?
Yes.
Well, good night.
She restores the covers, folding them back into place, and lies down in the center of the double bed. Humbert, his mouth slightly agape, stares down at her, then walks toward the narrow, twin-sized cot. With a creased brow, he glances at Lolita, then turns back the covers on the cot. Humbert lies down on the thin mattress and pulls the covers up to his chin. As he starts to settle in, the cot leans backward and collapses onto the floor. Oof. The next morning, Lolita sleeps with her face on her pillow. She starts to wake. She rolls over. Squinting against the sunlight that shines through the window, she sits up. Lolita pushes the covers aside and climbs out of bed. Wearing a long nightgown with a high neck, she saunters over to the cot and kneels at its head. Humbert sleeps, scowling slightly, with his hand to his face. She leans over his ear.
Wake up, Humbert. The hotel's on fire. The hotel's on fire. Quick!
What? On fire?
Yeah, get out of bed real quick. Quick, it's burning right down to the ground.
Lolita. You have to wake me. I only just got to sleep. Very funny.
By the way, what happened to your bed? It looks a lot lower.
Well, the bed collapsed. It's a collapsible bed.
As he smiles up at her, she breaks into a grin.
What time is it?
It's breakfast time.
You know, my tan is much darker than yours now.
That's not strictly true. You're a very fair-skinned lady.
He bends her fingers backward.
Oh. Look at that. That's very interesting.
Yeah.
What else can you do?
Hmm? Well, this little thumb can go all the way back to my wrist. See?
Yes, I can see. You're very talented.
Boy, you need a shave.
Of course I need a shave because I've not shaved since yesterday morning, and I'm a man who needs two shaves a day.
Mm. Do you always have to shave twice a day?
Yes, of course, because all the best people shave twice a day.
As she leans over the cot, he stares up at her in wonder.
Well, what should we do now?
Well, do you ring down and order breakfast?
No, I don't want to do that.
Well, what do you want to do?
Why don't we play a game?
A game? Oh, come on. Now, you get onto a room service at once.
No, really. I learned some real good games in camp. One in particular was fun.
Well, why don't you describe this one in particular good game?
Well, I played it with Charlie.
She runs her finger through his hair.
Charlie, who's he?
Charlie? He's that guy that you met in the office.
You mean the boy?
Mm-hmm.
You and he?
Yeah. You sure you can't guess what game I'm talking about?
No, not a very good guesser.
She cups her hand around his ear.
I don't know what game you play.
You mean you never played that game when you were a kid?
Hello.
All righty then.
With a sly, sexy smile, she inches around to the side of the bed. Fade to black. Now the station wagon drives down a freeway. Humbert sits behind the wheel with Lolita beside him in the front seat. She holds a bag of chips in one hand and a bottle of soda in the other. Chewing thoughtfully, she sips cola through a straw, wipes her mouth, and turns to her stepfather.
Have you ever kissed the Blarney Stone?
No, that's something I never did.
Boy, I sure wish I could.
Well, perhaps sometime we can organize a trip.
Hmm.
She bites a chip.
Hey, let's tell Mother.
Tell Mother what?
You know what.
No, I don't think that would be very funny.
Wonder what she'd do.
If you don't stop eating those chips, you won't have any appetite for your lunch.
Mm.
He takes a sip of her soda.
Oh, did you see that? A squashed cat. Boy, that's terrible. I hate things like that. Mm. You know what I'd like for lunch?
No, tell me.
A big plate of French fries and a malt.
Oh. Mm.
She picks a chip out of the bag with her tongue.
How long until we get to Leppingsville?
Well, I'm beginning to think that perhaps we won't make it this evening. We got off to rather a slow start, remember?
Mm. Can we go to a movie tonight?
If that's what you like.
Mm. I'll wait. Have you ever seen any of those, you know, those, foreign films?
Yes, frequently.
I don't like them.
Uh-huh.
Mm-mm. Will we stop at the next gas station?
All right. You're feeling all right, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. I feel fine. I want to call Mother at that hospital. What's the number? Well, don't you know the number?
I think it would be just as well if you wait until we get to Leppingsville.
Why? What difference does it make? I want to call her.
I just don't think it'd be a very good idea, Jill.
Why can't I call my mother if I want to?
Because you can't.
Why?
Because your mother is dead.
Come on now, cut it out. Why can't I call her?
Your mother is dead.
Her smile slowly fades. As a dusky sky hangs overhead, the station wagon pulls into a town. Nighttime. The car is parked near a motel's neon sign on the edge of a highway. Inside a darkened room, Humbert sits alone in bed, fully dressed. His hands cover his face. Lowering his hands, he leans against the headboard with a sigh. Humbert folds his fingers together and rests the back of his hands against his brow. Unlacing his fingers, he sets one restless hand behind his head and blinks several times. Humbert sits up and scoots down to the edge of the bed. He peers through an open door into an adjacent room. Lolita sits inside on a different bed. She rises, walking through a shared bathroom, and enters Humbert's room. Massaging her temple, she drops down beside him and lies across the bed. He rubs his hands together and gazes off to the side.
Try to stop crying. Everything's going to be all right.
Nothing will ever be all right.
He tenderly leans against her and strokes her hair.
I'm sure that we're going to be very happy, you and I.
But everything has changed all of a sudden. Everything was so, normal.
Lolita, please stop crying. We'll do things. We'll go places.
But there's no place to go back to.
We'll find a new home.
Where?
Beardsley. Lectureship starts in September. It's in Ohio. You like it there.
I'll hate it. I know I will.
No, you won't. It's a wonderful place.
But what about all my things back in Ramsdale? In the house?
Take care of all those things. What things do you want specially?
My record player and my records.
Well, we'll send for them, but in the meantime, I can buy you new ones to take the place of the old ones. I'll buy you the best hi-fi set that you ever saw and all the new records. Oh, is that there?
We can't stay in Beardsley forever. Where's that handkerchief?
He takes one out of his shirt pocket. She wipes her nose.
Promise me something.
Yes, anything.
She lies across his lap in his arms.
Promise you'll never leave me. I don't want to ever be in one of those horrible places for juvenile delinquents.
Whatever makes you think that would happen to you?
I know it would. And anyway, I'd rather be with you. You're a lot better than one of those places. You will promise, won't you?
Yes, I promise.
Cross your heart and hope to die.
Cross my heart and hope to die.
Holding her close, he gently rocks her.
Cross my heart and hope to die. Cross my heart and hope to die.
Now a quaint community sits nestled in a wooded area.
You must now forget Ramsdale and poor Charlotte and poor Lolita and poor Humbert and accompany us to Beardsley College, where my lectureship in French poetry is in its second semester. 6 months have passed and Lolita is attending an excellent school where it is my hope that she will be persuaded to read other things than comic books and movie romances.
Now Lolita lies across a bed while Humbert sits at her feet polishing her toenails. He sticks the brush between his lips to free up his hands and positions a cotton ball between her pinky and fourth toe.
Why were you so late coming home from school yesterday afternoon?
Yesterday. What was yesterday?
Yesterday was Thursday.
Oh, well, was I late?
Yes, you were. You finished school at 3 o'clock. You were not home until 6 o'clock.
That's right. Michelle and I... stayed to watch football practice.
In the Frigid Queen.
What do you mean, in the Frigid Queen?
I was driving around and I thought I saw you through the window.
Oh! Yeah, well, we stopped there for a malt afterwards. What difference does it make?
You were sitting at a table with two boys.
Yeah, well, Roy and Rex just happened to sit down with us.
Roy and Rex?
The co-captains of the football team.
I thought we understood no dates.
What do you mean, no dates? They just sat down at our table.
I don't want you around them. They're nasty-minded boys.
Oh, you're a fine one to talk about someone else's mind.
Don't avoid the issue. I told you, no dates.
It wasn't a date.
It was a date.
It wasn't a date.
It was a date, Lolita.
It was not a date.
It was a date.
It wasn't a date.
Well, whatever it was that you had yesterday afternoon, I don't want you to have it again. And while we're on the subject, how did you come to be so late on Saturday afternoon?
Saturday, I went to my piano lesson.
Your piano lesson? I thought that was on Wednesday.
No, it was changed to Saturday, remember? Between 2 and 4, Miss Starch piano. Well, ask Michelle. She was with me.
Ask Michelle. That's what you always say to me. Well, now, for a change, I'm going to ask you something about Michelle.
You can't have her. She belongs to a Marine.
I will ignore that idiotic joke. Why does she give me these searching looks whenever she comes to the house?
How should I know?
Have you told her anything about us?
No. Have you?
You've told her nothing.
You think I'm crazy?
You spend too much time with that girl. I don't want you to see her so often.
Oh, come on. She's the only friend I've got in this stinking world. You never let me have any fun.
No fun? You have all the fun in the world. We have fun together, don't we? Whenever you want something, I buy it for you automatically. I take you to concerts, to museums, to movies. I do all the housework. Who does the tidying up? I do. Who does the cooking? I do. You and I, we have lots of fun. Don't we, Lolita?
Regarding him, she breaks into a warm smile.
Come here.
He studies her for a moment, his mouth hanging open. As Lolita eyes him seductively, she fingers a straw inside a bottle of cola. Humbert sets down the nail polish and walks around to the other side of the bed. He sits face to face with her.
Still love me?
Completely. You know that?
You know what I want more than anything else in the world?
Now, what do you want?
I want you to be proud of me.
But I am proud of you, Lolita.
No, I mean really proud of me. You see, they want me for the lead in the school play. Isn't that fantastic? And I have to have a letter from you giving your permission.
Who wants you?
Well, Adusa Gold, the drama teacher, Claire Quilty, and Vivian Darkblue.
And who might they be?
Oh, they're the authors. They're here to supervise the production.
But you've never acted before.
Well, they say I have a unique and rare talent.
And how did they know that?
Well, we had readings, and I was chosen over 30 other girls.
That's the first I've heard about it.
I know. I wanted to surprise you.
And I suppose that Roy has a part in this production?
Roy? What's he got to do with
this? Roy and Rex, naturally. I suppose they're in it, huh?
Well, how do I know? I only met them yesterday. Besides, they're football players, not actors.
And you suddenly, overnight, are an actress. Well, it's out of the question.
Out of the question?
I don't want you in that atmosphere.
What atmosphere? It's just a school play.
I've told you over and over again, I don't want you mixing with those boys. This is just another excuse to make dates with them and to get together close with them.
You don't love me.
I do love you.
You don't love me.
I do love you, Lolita.
Driving me crazy. You won't let me do anything. You just want to keep me locked up with you in this filthy house.
Lolita, go and wash your face. I'll go downstairs and start the roast.
Someday you'll
go and wash your face.
This.
I'll go
you'll
downstairs and start the roast.
Oh,
yeah. And don't smudge your toenails.
Nighttime. Humbert drives the station wagon down a residential street to a two-story house. Moments later, he steps through the front entrance holding a leather portfolio and a newspaper. With a sigh, he dumps the paper onto a table in the vestibule, then heads past a staircase.
Lou?
He opens the door to a sitting room.
Lou?
A strange man sits alone in the darkness.
Good evening, Dr. Humbert.
The professor flicks on the light.
Oh. Who are you?
He looks like Quilty.
I am Dr. Zimpf. Dr. Humbert, I'm pleased to meet you. I'm the Beardsley High School psychologist.
Have you been here? I mean, how did you get in?
Well, your little daughter opened the door to me on the way to her piano lesson, and she said I was to wait in here until your arrival. And so here I am.
Sit down, make yourself at home.
Sit in the dark so as to save you the expense of the electricity.
That is very considerate of you.
Oh, it's a great pleasure.
What can I do for you, Dr. Zemp?
Dr. Humbarts, would you mind if I'm putting to you a blunt question?
No, by all means, do so.
We are wondering, has anybody instructed Lolita in the facts of life?
The facts?
The facts of life. You see, Lolita is a sweet little child, but the onset of maturity seems to be giving her a certain amount of trouble.
I really don't think that this is a fit topic.
Well, Dr. Humbarts, to you, she's still the little girl what is cradled in the arms. But to those boys over there at Beardsley High, she is a lovely girl, you know, with the swing, you know, the jazz. And she has got the curvatures which I take a lot of notice of. You and I, what are we? We are the symbols of power, sitting in our offices there. We are making the signatures, writing the contracts, and the decisions all the time. What if we cast our minds back? Just think, what were we only yesterday? Yesterday, Dr. Humberts, you and I were little high school gym, and we were carrying little high school chain school books. You remember those days?
In point of fact, Dr. Zempf, I'm a lecturer in French literature.
I have not made my point quite clear. I have some other details which I would like to put to you, Dr. Humbarts.
He takes out note cards.
Here. She is defiant and rude. Sighs a good deal in the class. She sighs, makes a sound of... chews gum vehemently. All the time she's chewing this gum. Handles books gracefully. That's all right. Doesn't really matter. Voice is pleasant. Giggles rather often. And is excitable. She giggles at things. Little dreamy. Concentration is poor. She looks at the book for a while and then she gets fed up with it. Has private jokes of her own which no one understands, so we can't enjoy them with her. She either has exceptional control or she has no control at all. We cannot decide which. Added to that, just yesterday, Dr. Humberts, she wrote a most obscene word, with a lipstick, if you please, on the health pamphlets. And so, in our opinion, she is suffering from acute repression of the libido, of the natural instincts.
I fail to see the significance of all this as far as her record as a student is concerned, Dr. Zemp.
We Americans, we are progressively modern. We believe that it is equally important to prepare the pupils for the mutually satisfactory mating and the successful child rearing. That is what we believe.
And what do you suggest?
I am suggesting that Dr. Cudler, who is the district psychologist to the Board of Education, should visit you in the home with a 3-member board of psychologists. And once they are in the home, they can investigate thoroughly in the home situation with all 4 of them.
The home situation.
So that they can get straight at the source of their repression.
But she is not being repressed, Dr. Zemp.
Do I take it then that that you are refusing to cooperate with Dr. Cudler and this man what he's got?
I am not refusing anything at all, but please understand me. I don't want to...
What do you think then?
I absolutely refuse to have a quartet of strange psychologists nosing around my house.
Dr. Humbarts, I'm afraid that you may have no choice. Cigarette?
No choice?
No choice. Keep the peg. Look, Dr. Humbarts, I don't wish to take this to a higher level of authority if I can possibly help it, you understand?
I should hope not.
So? You must help me?
Humbert shrugs.
What can I do?
Perhaps, I don't know, but perhaps there is another approach that we can take. Something new altogether. Something new approach. What would you say? Do you like that? Some new era of adjustment that Lolita could find perhaps by taking the larger share of the extracurricular school activities.
For
the
I said. Have never objected to her taking part in the extracurricular
school activity. You see, we have questioned Lolita on the home situation, but it says not one word. Stays with her lips buttoned up. So we are speaking with the friends of her, and they are saying things which I wouldn't repeat to you here. But there's one thing which has arisen from this, which is quite clear, that you, Dr. Humberts, should definitely unveto that girl's non-participation in the school play.
He bangs his hand against a table.
All right, perhaps I was wrong in the attitude that I took about the school play.
That's very big of you to admit that. And whilst you're admitting that, why don't you also loosen up a little bit more on the other two Ds, yeah? The dating and the dance?
You think that those are equally important?
Dr. Humberts, I tell you what I do think. I feel that you and I should do all in our power to stop that old Dr. Cuddler and his quartet of psychologists from fiddling around in the home situation. That's what I feel. Don't you agree with me? Yeah.
Now, in the wings of the theater, Lolita wears a costume and stage makeup.
I stand before
She's on one side of a curtain. Vivian and Quilty are on the other. He pulls it back and throws Lolita a knowing look. She steps onto the stage.
The bewitcher is bewitched.
Look, Semiramis, look.
Yes, the goat removeth his horns.
Let us take him to the dark kingdom.
Yes.
To the dark kingdom. Away! Away!
She steps back into the wings with two other actors. Humbert enters the backstage area, applauding eagerly. He approaches an attractive woman.
Why, good evening, Dr. Humbert.
Miss Stotts, good evening.
Did you enjoy the performance?
Very much. I enjoyed every minute of it.
I wondered if the symbolism wasn't a bit heavy-handed at times.
Yes, I know what you mean by that, but the boys and girls were so charming, weren't they?
Oh, they were, weren't they? And particularly little Lolita. She was quite perfect. You must be awfully proud of her.
Yes, I am. You know, her performance took me completely by surprise. She made me promise not to watch any of the rehearsals.
Oh, they're so intense at that age. She must have worked awfully hard, though. No wonder you decided to suspend her piano lessons. After all, there are only so many...
Beg your pardon, did you say suspend her piano lessons?
Yes. Do you play, Dr. Humbert?
Well, hardly at all now. Didn't she have a lesson with you last Saturday afternoon?
No.
Nor the preceding Saturday?
No, she called to say she was busy rehearsing.
Busy rehearsing?
But as a matter of fact, she hasn't had a lesson for, 4 weeks. Oh, I do hope I haven't spoken out of turn.
Oh, no, not at all. I must have misunderstood.
By the way, Dr. Humbert, there are so few people in Beardsley appreciate music. I was wondering sometime if perhaps you'd like to come around and I could play something for
yes,
you.
Yes, of course. Certainly I will. Thank you. Excuse me now.
He goes over to Lolita, who's embracing one of the actors.
Oh.
Oh, hi, Dad.
Wasn't it wonderful?
Oh, how did you like it?
We're having a party at my house with a cast and author. Everybody's invited.
I'm afraid I must take Lolita home.
What?
Our little starlet has had enough excitement
it's
for one
really
evening.
It's really going to be fun. Everybody's
I wouldn't want you to miss any more piano lessons.
I haven't missed
you know what I'm talking about.
It's going to be late.
Say goodnight to your friends.
Oh, come on. Now, this isn't
come
a regular party. This
goodnight,
is the
Lorna.
Cast
come on.
Party.
Come on.
This is the cast
discuss it
party.
Later.
As they leave, Lolita eyes her piano teacher.
Brewster.
Quilty.
Go and get some type A Kodachrome.
Okay.
The man walks off. Quilty and Vivian stare after Humbert and Lolita. Later, as stepfather and daughter enter their home, he grabs her arm.
You're not getting upstairs.
Yes, I am!
Well,
let
have a
go
little...
of me! You're hurting
Be
my
quiet.
Arm!
Stop, sir.
You let me go, you jerk! Go of me!
Sit down. Now you're going to answer a few questions.
You've got a big, fat nerve dragging me
Stop
away
that
like that.
Silly noise.
Who the heck
Stop
you
it.
Think you are?
Do you want the police
Not
to come
letting
in here?
Me go to my cast.
Stop
I hope the police do come in here. You freak!
He slams a door. Books fall off shelves.
All right. Now the doors are shut. Come on, shouting. Let's hear how loud you can shout. Come on.
She crosses her legs with a sullen expression.
Now, perhaps you will tell me. What were you doing on Saturday between 2 and 4 in the afternoon?
I went to my piano lesson.
That's a lie.
It is not.
I happen to know you haven't been to a piano lesson for 4 weeks now.
Oh, yeah? Well, just ask Miss Starch.
I asked Miss Starch. How do you think I know? She told me. I saw her this evening. Did you see her at the performance?
Yeah.
All right, now tell me, what have you been doing these afternoons?
Her chest heaving, she locks onto his gaze.
You really want to know?
Yes, I do. I really want to know.
All right, I'm going to tell you the real truth of what I've been doing. I've been going to extra rehearsals.
Oh, that's the most fatuous lie you could possibly think up. Don't tell me anymore, because I know exactly what you've been doing. You've been with this boy, this leading man of yours, this Roy. Isn't that so?
Her lips curl in a cunning smile.
You're sick.
Oh, stop. Don't throw those silly, silly cliches
no,
at
seriously.
Me. Don't tell me anymore. You've been with this boy, haven't you? Come on, tell me.
You need help. You're imagining things.
Shut up, Lolita. Stop that silly talk.
She turns away from him, resting against the arm of the sofa. He desperately massages his temples. He rubs his pants leg.
Lolita.
Looking away, she drums her fingers against the sofa arm. Humbert comes around to her side and squats before her.
Lolita. Now, if you swear to me that this isn't true, I promise that I will believe you.
I'm not going to swear anything to you. Why should I? You'll never believe me, no matter what I swear.
I will believe you.
No, you won't. Let's face it. You're not
going to
believe
me. Just swear to me. I'll forget the whole thing. I'll never cross-question you about it again.
No, you'll never believe me. Why should I swear to you?
As he tenderly strokes her arm, she blows her bubblegum.
All right, I believe you. It's partly my fault, I realize. That is something that's happened on account of this horrible place. All these people poking their nose into our business, and I never see you anymore, what with your soda fountains and your extra... Stop doing that!
Her eyes widen in surprise. She flicks a glance at him and restrains a giggle.
But we could leave this place, perhaps. Yes, this... There's nothing to keep us here. We haven't any obligations here. We don't owe rent to anybody. We could just pack up our bags. Tonight we could go now. I could take you for a wonderful trip around the country.
You can't leave here.
Why not?
Well, you've got to work. What about your job?
My job, that doesn't mean anything. I could always publish articles. My book's going to be published quite soon. It's a wonderful idea.
Well, I have to go to school. What about my education?
Your education? What sort of an education do you think you're getting here? You got a much better education when you're traveling around with me.
Well, look, the play has 2 more performances next week.
Oh, don't start talking about the play to me. That's what's just come between us. That's what started this whole row. Look, don't you want to get back to where we were before we came to this horrible place? Don't you want to come away with me?
No! I hate you! I hate you!
Lolita, you want to stay with this filthy boy? That's what it is.
Yes! Why don't you leave
Shut
me
your
alone?
Mouth, you heartless little psychopath!
Do you're
I promise you one thing.
Great.
You're not going to see these filthy boys anymore, I tell you that. That's one
oh,
thing
Oh, yeah, well, I've got news for you. I'm going to do anything I want to, anytime
shut
I
up,
want
you,
to, with anybody
shut
I
up,
want to. And you can't stop
shut
me.
Up.
He releases his tight grip on her and goes to the door. Humbert opens it to find a middle-aged woman.
Oh, Miss LeBron.
Dr. Humbert, may I come in?
What can I do for you?
Well, this is a little awkward to say, but I thought you ought to know. This noise, I can hear every word next door.
We were having a family around.
Oh,
you
yeah.
You know, the child's voice is very shrill when she gets upset.
Yes, of course. Well, I understand perfectly. But, well, I happen to have company, and he's a minister of the church,
oh,
and you
minister.
Know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, perhaps you can convey my apologies to him. And, you know, we were quarreling about piano
oh, hello,
lessons.
Oh, dear.
Hello, Miss LeBone.
Lolita puts on a coat.
Good night.
She walks out.
What a pretty get-up.
She was in the school play tonight.
Oh, yes, of course, the school play. Dr. Humbert, I do hope you don't think that I'm presuming on our good neighbor relations, but, well, I think I ought to tell you that the neighbors are beginning to get a little curious about you and your little girl.
I can't think why they should do that.
Oh, well, you know how people talk. I must get back to my guest. Would you care to join us for a little while?
That's very nice of you. Thank you very much, but I'll take a rain check.
Oh, right. Well, good night.
Miss LeBeau leaves. Humbert stares after Lolita, then quickly starts to follow, shutting the front door behind him. Later, at a deserted gas station, Lolita talks on a telephone inside a brightly lit booth. Humbert jogs up and jerks open the booth door.
All right, come on. We're getting home.
Wait a minute.
I forbade you to go to that party, didn't I?
I wasn't going to the party.
Who were you talking to just now?
I tried to call you.
You were speaking to somebody just now on the telephone. Who was that?
I got a wrong number. Listen, I've decided something.
Yes?
I want to leave school.
You what?
I don't want you to be mad at me anymore. Everything's going to be great from now on.
You mean that?
I hate school and I hate the play. I really do. I never want to go back.
That's good.
Let's leave tomorrow. We can go for a long trip. And we'll go wherever I want to, won't we?
Yes, my darling.
Are you glad?
Yes, of course I am.
What the hell with the play? See what I mean?
Yes, that's good.
Let's go home. I feel served on that.
He wraps his arm around her as they walk off. Now the station wagon drives down a misty highway.
The brakes were relined, the water pipes unclogged, the valves ground. We had promised Beardsley School that we would be back as soon as my Hollywood engagement came to an end. Inventive Humbert was to be, I hinted, chief consultant in the production of a film dealing with existentialism. Still a hot thing at the time.
Later, driving through flatlands, they turn down a dirt road and head into the heart of a tiny town. As they pass an intersection, a dark-colored sedan pulls out and starts to follow them. Inside the station wagon, Lolita yawns and lifts her long blonde hair off the back of her neck. She stretches her hands high above her head, then fiddles with a black scarf around her neck. Beside her, Humbert repeatedly flicks a glance at the rearview mirror, eyeing the dark sedan. It trails them about four car lengths back. Lolita covers her nose and mouth with a black scarf, pretending to be a Muslim woman. She gazes at Humbert mysteriously. Nighttime. Lolita sleeps with her head on Humbert's shoulder. The dark sedan still follows them. Its headlights shine through the back window.
I cannot tell you the exact day when I first knew with utter certainty that a strange car was following us. Queer how I misinterpreted the designation of doom.
As night falls, they head past a small farm. Daytime. Humbert and Lolita drive through a bustling town. Pulling into a filling station, they stop beside a gas pump. Humbert turns off the engine, and they both climb out. An attendant comes over.
Fill her up, please.
As Humbert walks off, Lolita begins to wander around. In the men's room a little later, Humbert scrubs his hands at the sink. He stands before a partially open window. Looking out, he spots Lolita chatting with the driver of a light-colored car. She stands at the driver's window, dressed in jeans rolled up to her calves and a sleeveless blouse. Gazing at her, Humbert's mouth falls open. Lolita glances toward the men's room window, then quickly turns away from the car. It drives off. Humbert gapes as he watches it go. Later, the station wagon rolls down a winding strip of asphalt past desert mountains. The dark sedan follows a quarter mile behind. In the station wagon, Lolita shivers.
I'm cold. I'm gonna get a sweater.
She slips.
Oh!
Watch it, please!
You can drive so fast! I'm gonna kill! What's a big fat hurry anyway?
There's been a car following us which we've been trying to lose.
What?
All right, I haven't seen it for the past quarter of an hour. I think we have lost it.
Really?
I didn't want to scare you, but this car has been following us for the past 3 days, and yesterday it was parked outside the motel.
Oh, I haven't seen any car. Are you sure?
Yes, I'm sure.
I think you're just imagining things.
What did that man ask you in the service station?
What man?
There was a man in the service station. I saw you while I was in the john.
Oh, I didn't see any man at the service. Oh, yes, that man. He wondered if I had a map. I guess he got lost.
Oh, no. Now, listen, please. I don't know if you're lying to me. I don't know if you're insane. And I don't really care any longer. But that man, I believe, was the man who was driving the car that's been following us.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
And I think he's some kind of a cop.
A cop?
Yes.
Well, if he is a cop, the worst thing we can do is let him know we're scared. Let's just ignore him and slow down.
Will you kindly tell me, please, what you said to him exactly and what he said to you?
I told you.
Well, did he ask you where we were going?
All he asked was if I had a map.
Well, I would have thought that he would have asked the man as I was stationed there.
Well, I would have thought he would, too.
Well, anyhow, I think we've lost him.
The car swerves back and forth, then skids to a stop.
Oh, I told you not to drive so fast. You almost
leave me alone, killed. Can't you?
Don't talk to me that way.
Do you think I wanted to have a blowout?
Oh. Hey, look, all the nines changed to the next car.
There it is. What? It's the car. Don't you recognize it now?
No.
Don't look there. I don't want him to think that we've seen him.
He eyes its approach in the rearview mirror.
What's he stopping for?
Maybe he's going to help us.
He can't help us stopping way back there like that. Hmm. He can't be the police, because if we were the police, they'd just draw up beside us and start writing a ticket.
But the police...
I'm trying to think. Maybe it's a special kind of police who are just supposed to follow people.
Yeah, like the vice squad. Scatty. Wow.
Be quiet. Stop talking. We've got to think about this. What are we going to do?
Am I being quiet enough?
Don't try to be clever, please. Got a terrific pain in my arm.
Really?
Then what I did to it.
Hmm. Well, what are we going to do now?
Well, I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to get out of this car. I'm going to walk down the road, and I'm going to speak to him face to face. I'm going to say, what's all this about? What are you doing?
I wouldn't do that.
Why not?
Well, it might be dangerous.
Holding his left arm, he winces in pain.
Oh, my arm is killing me. I don't seem to be able to breathe properly.
Oh, well, it's probably just gas pains.
Yeah, it must be that.
Maybe you ought to see a doctor in the next town.
No, I'll be all right. It's probably just something I ate.
Wait a minute. I once read in a Reader's Digest that this is the way heart attacks start.
Shut up, will you?
Oh, shut up yourself. Sick and tired of hearing about your moans and groans. If you want to know something, I feel pretty lousy myself.
She wraps the hood of her sweater around her neck. Humbert studies the mirror.
He's moving.
Big deal.
He's turning around.
The dark sedan makes a 3-point U-turn, then heads back down the highway.
It's going away.
As he stares after it, Lolita frowns and rubs her throat.
Are you feeling cold?
Yeah. I feel all achy. I bet I'm getting the Asiatic flu.
Here. You feel your head.
She leans close, and he presses his hand to her brow, then her cheek.
We make a fine pair, don't we?
Mm.
You just relax and stretch out on the seat, if that would make you feel better. And I will see what I can do about changing the tire.
Now the station wagon backs into a parking space in a lot outside a hospital. Moments later, Humbert steps through the entrance carrying a bouquet of flowers and several books. Passing the front desk, he nods.
Good morning, Miss...
A nurse approaches.
Well, good morning, Mr. Humbert. We seem to be going the same way. I'm just about to give your daughter some medicine.
How is she?
Oh, she's much better today. Her temperature's normal and her cough's gone. Here's your father, dear.
Hi. Yeah.
They enter a private room where Lolita lies in bed.
How are you feeling?
I feel fine.
You're looking much better.
The nurse gives her medicine.
Ugh. I grew some flowers.
Yeah.
But thanks anyway.
Yes, can you find some water to put these in, please?
Oh, certainly.
Have you been getting notes here in the hospital?
Excuse me. Does your father think that you get notes from my boyfriend?
She takes a letter out of his hand and leaves with the flowers.
I just thought it might be a bill from the hospital or something.
Do you have to antagonize everybody?
It was a perfectly reasonable question.
What's the matter with you anyway? You look kind of slimy.
I'm afraid I'm coming down with a cold.
Hmm. Got it from me, huh?
I suppose.
Mr. Humbert, would you please move your car to the visitor's parking lot?
I'm sorry, I was in a hurry and I didn't feel too bright this morning.
But you parked it right next to a sign saying staff only.
All right. I shall be leaving in a moment.
I'm sorry, but these are the hospital rules.
She walks out again.
Mary was only trying to be helpful.
Yes, I know that sort of help, but I've no doubt she's been just as helpful with you all the time.
She has.
And I shouldn't wonder if you two have been exchanging the crummiest of confessions.
Oh, come on, now, let's not start that all up again.
I brought you some books. My friend, Professor Bear, the Romantic Poets. And here's something you might like, The History of Dancing. And Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man by James Joyce, you might like. What are these? These are not yours?
Well, those are Mary's.
And since when have nurses worn dark glasses when on duty?
There we go again.
He tries on the sunglasses.
When did the doctor say that you can leave the hospital?
What?
Are you going to read the magazine or talk to me for a while?
Sure.
When did the doctor say that you can leave the hospital?
I think he wants me to stay another 48 hours.
Oh, that's all right. We can start early on Tuesday morning and we'll make the Mexican border in 3 days. And that'll be the end of all those mysterious agents following us around.
Mr. Humbert, I must ask you to move your car.
I'm just leaving.
Goodbye.
He leans in to give her a kiss. She turns her cheek.
Might catch your cold.
He gives her a tender peck and gently squeezes her arms.
I shall stay in tonight and nurse my cold, so I shan't see you until tomorrow morning.
Bye-bye.
She goes back to her magazine. Gazing down at her, he waves goodbye. Lolita does likewise. After a moment, Humbert turns to go. Nighttime. The station wagon sits parked outside a motel cabin. Inside a dimly lit room, Humbert lies in bed, buried under the covers. He reaches across a nightstand. Knocking over a teacup, saucer, and spoon, the professor flicks on a light and slowly sits up. Throwing off the comforter, he places his feet on the floor and wraps his coat tightly around him. Humbert grabs the telephone off a nearby table. It slips out of his grasp and falls to the floor. He fumbles for the receiver, then brings it to his ear.
Hello.
Hello, is that Professor Humbert?
Yes.
How are you, Professor?
Who is this, please?
I'm sort of really sorry to disturb you. I hope I really haven't woken you at this terribly late hour. I was just wondering if you've been enjoying your stay in our lovely little town here.
Who's this calling?
Oh, my name. Oh, it doesn't matter about my name. It's really an obscure, unremarkable name, you understand, Professor. But my department, you see, is sort of concerned with the bizarre rumors that have been circulating about you and that lovely, remarkable girl you've been traveling around with.
Look, I'm very much afraid you'll have to identify yourself because this conversation is becoming more and more preposterous.
Professor, tell me something. I guess all this traveling around you do, you don't get much time to see a psychiatrist regularly, is that right?
I have no psychiatrist, and I don't need a psychiatrist.
I tell you what I ask, you see. You are classified in our files, Professor. You're classified in our files as a white widowed male. I wonder if you'd be prepared to give our investigator a report, Professor, on your current sex life. If any.
Look, I don't know who you are, and I certainly have no interest in your investigators, and therefore I'm afraid that you will have to terminate this conversation.
He sets the phone back on the table. In the middle of the night, his car races into the hospital lot and parks. Moments later, Humbert steps through the entrance. He goes to the front desk, where a dark-haired attendant sits.
Can I help you, sir?
Yes, my name is Humbert. I want to pay the bill of Miss Hayes, who is in room 3. I'm taking her home.
Have you gotten permission from the doctor, sir?
I can do anything I choose to do. It has nothing to do with
the doctor. I'm afraid you have to have permission from the doctor.
What is this, a prison or a hospital?
I'm afraid you'll have to speak to Dr. Keegi. I'm calling Dr. Keegi. Dr. Keegi, come to reception, please.
I'll just go into her room to her left.
Oh, no, no, you can't go in there.
I'll get her to get her bags ready.
Oh, Dr. Keegi will be down in just a minute. Why don't you wait?
He stuffs his hands into his coat pockets. A doctor approaches.
Yes, Miss Rogers?
Dr. Keegi, Mr. Humbert.
Well, how long have you had that cough, Mr. Humbert?
I'm perfectly all right, thank you. I simply want to pay the bill for Miss Hayes in room 3 and take her away from here.
Hayes, room 3. Well, wasn't she discharged earlier this evening, Miss Rompers?
I'll see.
No, she couldn't have been.
Yes, she was discharged at 8:15 this evening.
Oh, that's impossible.
But it's right here. She was discharged at 8:15.
Oh, you nurse, what's your name? She's still in there, isn't she?
Oh, Mr. Humbert, your daughter left early this evening.
Well, that's ridiculous. Hey, where do you think you're going?
As they follow him into the patient wing, Humbert starts to strangle Nurse Mary.
Where are you? Get your
hands off her!
Where is she?
Dr. Keegi and two orderlies pull him off.
Hold on. Let go of me! Let go!
What do you think you're doing? Hold on. Don't let go!
Hold on. Where is she?
Sydney, get a straitjacket.
All right.
Doctor, this man must be psychotic. His stepdaughter was a patient in there, and she left this evening in care of her uncle.
Her uncle? Did you say uncle?
Yes.
Let me go. Hold!
Oh!
He struggles in the grasp of the three men. They pull him down to the floor.
There he is!
All right, hold him now. Got him under me?
Yeah. All right, let me...
Now look, mister. You caused quite a serious disturbance here. Now hold it!
Easy.
If you like, we'll call the police.
The police? No. We don't need the police. It's quite unpleasant.
All right. Let's get this business straight. This girl was officially discharged earlier tonight in the care of her uncle.
If you say so.
Well, has she or hasn't she an uncle?
Well, all right, let's say she has an uncle.
What do you mean, let's say she has an uncle?
All right, she has an uncle. Uncle Gus, and yes, I remember now. He was going to pick her up here at the hospital. I forgot that.
Forgot?
Yes, I forgot.
What's a strange thing to forget, isn't it?
That's not so strange. You don't know my brother Gus. He's very easy to forget.
He's drunk. That's what's the matter with him.
Yes, that's right. I've been drinking much too much. I have personal problems, you understand?
Here it is, Doctor. No, it's ours.
Dr. Keegi pushes the straitjacket away, then takes out a little flashlight and shines a tiny beam into Humbert's eyes.
Would you like some black coffee or something?
No, not now, thank you. I really ought to move on now.
I think you feel well enough to leave.
Yes, just let me up. I'm fine now. Much better.
See if he gets on my eyes.
One more.
All right, let him up.
The orderlies help him to his feet. He slips, then finds his footing and starts out.
She didn't by any chance leave any message for me. No, I suppose.
The orderlies dust off Humbert's coat and escort him to the exit. With a glance over his shoulder, the professor walks out, followed by the two muscular men. Now a piece of paper and a typewriter fills our view. It's dated March 19th. A letter begins to form on the page. Dear Dad, how's everything? I have gone through much sadness and hardship. I'm married. I'm going to have a baby. I'm going nuts because we don't have enough to pay our debts and get out of here. Please send us a check. Now cars drive through the heart of a large city. In a seedy part of town, the white station wagon rolls down a neighborhood block. Several teenagers hanging out in the street and on stoops watch it go by. Later, Humbert's car drives past a warehouse, then past the tracks of an above-ground train. Later still, it turns a corner and parks. Humbert shuts off the engine and opens the glove compartment. He takes out Mr. Hayes' old revolver and shoves it into the pocket of his fur-trimmed coat. Climbing out of the car, he starts toward a large, dilapidated house at the end of the street. Humbert opens the picket fence's gate and steps up to the entrance. The front door opens. Lolita stands on the other side. She wears black glasses and a matronly blouse over her pregnant belly.
Well, gee, what a surprise.
So this is what Mrs. Richard T. Schiller looks like.
Oh, well, I'm afraid you'll have to excuse my appearance, but you've caught me on ironing day.
He eyes her coldly.
Oh, but do come in. Gee, you're looking marvelous. May I take your coat?
No, I'd rather keep it.
I wrote to you about a week ago. I was beginning to think maybe you were sore or something. I must say, I wouldn't blame you if you were. It's a fine thing, me dropping out of sight for so long and then writing you for a handout. Would you like a cup of coffee?
No, thank you, Ben.
For a drink, maybe?
No.
She sets down a laundry basket.
Won't be able to do that in another month.
Is that him?
Two men out back.
The one facing us?
Yes, that's Dick. Oh, but listen, he doesn't know a thing about you and me, so please watch what you say.
That's ridiculous. You don't expect me to believe that, do you?
Why not? You don't think I'd tell him, do you?
Who does he think that I am?
My stepfather.
He goes over to the window to study the two young men.
Then this isn't the man who took you from the hospital?
No, of course not.
How long have you known him?
About a year. I met him in Phoenix. I was working as a waitress.
Who is the man that I'm looking for?
Oh, there's no point in going into that. It's all over.
Lolita, I have to know.
Well, I'm sorry, but I can't tell you.
Look, Lolita, I have a perfect right to know this.
Oh, criminy, I should never have written to you.
You wouldn't have written to me if you hadn't needed the money. Now, if you're a sensible girl, and if you want what I've come to give you, you'll tell me what I want to know.
She starts to pace. The house is shabby and filled with old furniture.
You remember Dr. Zempf?
Dr. Zempf?
That German psychologist that came to see you at Beardsley.
Was it him?
Not exactly.
I didn't come here to play guessing games. Tell me who it was.
Well, give me a chance to explain.
All right.
Do you remember that car that used to follow us around?
I'm not likely to forget that in a hurry.
She pours a cup of tea.
Remember Mother's old flame at the school dance? No, you probably don't remember. Do you remember the guy that you talked to at that hotel on the way back from camp? He pretended he was part of that police convention that was there.
Vaguely, yes.
She takes a sip and sets it down.
And do you remember that guy who called you at the motel?
The night you disappeared. Yes, I remember him very well.
And yet you still haven't guessed.
I told you that I'm not playing games with you. Tell me who it was.
It was Claire Quilty.
Who was Claire Quilty?
All of them, of course.
You mean Dr. Zempf? He was Claire Quilty.
Well, congratulations. I don't suppose it ever occurred to you that when you moved into our house, my whole world didn't revolve around you. You see, I'd had a crush on him ever since the times that he used to come and visit Mother. He wasn't like you and me. He wasn't a normal person. He was a genius. He had a kind of, beautiful Japanese, Oriental philosophy of life. You know that hotel that we stopped at on the way back from camp? Well, it was just by accident that he was staying there. But it didn't take him long to figure out what was going on between us. And from that moment on, he was up to every brilliant trick he could think of.
And he did all these brilliant tricks for the sheer fun of tormenting me.
Well, sometimes he had to. Like the German psychologist bit. He had to trick you into letting me be in his play. Otherwise, how would I ever get to see him?
So that's why you wanted to be in the play?
That's right.
And all those afternoons you were supposed to be practicing the piano, you were actually with this man?
Mm-hmm.
I guess he was the only guy I was ever really crazy about.
Aren't you forgetting something?
He points to her husband.
Oh, Dick. Dick's very sweet. We're very happy together. But I guess it's just not the same thing.
And I suppose I never counted, of course.
You have no right to say that. After all, the past is the past.
What happened to this oriental-minded genius?
Look, don't make fun of me. I don't have to tell you a blasted thing.
I'm not making fun of you. I'm merely trying to find out what happened. When you left the hospital, where did he take you?
To New Mexico.
Whereabouts in New Mexico?
To a dude ranch near Santa Fe. The only problem with it was he had such a bunch of weird friends staying there.
What kind of weird friends?
Weird. Painters, nudists, writers, weightlifters. But I figured I could take anything for a couple of weeks because I loved him and he was on his way to Hollywood to write one of those spectaculars. And he promised to get me a studio contract. But it never turned out that way, and instead he wanted me to cooperate with the others, making some kind of a, you know, an art movie.
An art movie?
Yeah.
And you did it?
No, I didn't do it. And so he kicked me out.
You could have come back to me.
She lowers her gaze. Her husband Dick and his friend come to the window. The two men enter.
Oh, excuse me, sweetheart. Bill's cut his thumb.
Oh. Just a scratch.
Dick, this is my stepfather, Professor Humbert.
Oh, how do you do, Professor?
How do you do?
This is our neighbor, Bill Crest.
Glad to meet you, Professor. How do you do?
Well, gee, Lowe's told me so much about you.
Well, guess we might as well fix that thumb.
She goes off with Bill.
This is a grand surprise, Professor. When you didn't answer the letter, we were afraid that you were still sore at Lowe for having run away from home.
Oh. Yes.
How about a beer?
No, thank you.
I bet you're dry after that long drive. This is some of that foreign beer. I'm sure you'll like it.
No beer, thank you.
Betty, you're upstairs, Bill.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, fine. It's all right.
Can I get you anything else? Are you
nothing,
hungry?
Thank you.
How are you two getting along?
Just fine.
You'll have to speak up a little. His phone's on the mic. One of those for me?
Oh, sure, hon.
As they sit together on a bed, he opens her a beer.
I hope you're planning on staying a while. He caught us a little unprepared, but we'll try and make you feel at home.
I shall have to be on my way, I'm afraid.
You can have the bed upstairs. We sleep down here because Lowe likes to watch the TV.
He can't stay, Dick.
Oh, what a shame. I wish you could.
Humbert nods.
Why don't you tell him about Alaska?
Yeah, I guess Lou explained to you about going to Alaska and all that in the letter. It's a marvelous opportunity up there. An opportunity for a guy like me to get in on the ground floor. Well, industry's opening up, and if we can scrape together enough money with maybe your help, well, we can go. We got a few back debts. We kind of overextended ourselves.
How are the Farlows?
Oh, John Farlow is quite all right. It was he who gave me your letter, of course.
She's sure a swell kid, Professor Hayes. She sure is. She's just nuts about dogs and kids. And she's going to make a swell mother, too. Well, Alaska's a great place for kids, you know. Lots of room for them to run around.
Bill comes back downstairs.
Well, it's as good as new.
Well, we better get back to work, Bill. I guess you two have a lot to talk about.
It's been a pleasure meeting you, Professor.
Thank you.
When you're finished, Dad, I hope you don't mind me calling you that. Well, come on out back, and I'll show you what I'm making for the kid.
Thank you.
Just holler, sweetheart, if you want me for KP.
He heads out back with Bill, waves from the window, and turns away.
Dick's awfully sweet, isn't he?
Humbert grabs her hand.
Come here.
What's going on?
He pulls her to the front door.
What are you doing?
This may be neither here nor there, but I've got to say it. Life is very short. Between here and that old car, it's out of 25 paces. Make them. Now, right now.
What?
Come away with me now, just as you are.
Oh, you mean you'll give us the money? Only if I go to a hotel with you?
No, you've got it all wrong. I want you to leave your husband in this awful house. I want you to live with me and die with me and everything with me.
You must be crazy.
No, I'm perfectly serious now. I've never been less crazy in all my life. Let's start afresh. We can forget everything that has happened.
No, it's too late.
No, it's not too late.
Can you please keep your voice
down? All right, but don't tell me that it's too late, because it's not too late. If you want time to think it over, that's perfectly all right with me, because after all, I've waited already for 3 years, and I think I could wait for the rest of my life if necessary. You're not giving anything up. There's nothing here to keep you. All right, don't tell me this man is married to you, but that's purely incidental. It was an accident that you met him in the first place. You're not bound to him in any way, whereas you are bound to me by everything that we have lived through together, you and I.
I'm going to have his baby in 3 months.
I know.
I bring too many things in my life. I can't do that to him. He needs me.
Humbert dissolves into tears.
Oh, come on now. Don't make a scene. Stop crying. He could walk in here at any minute. Will you please stop crying?
Shaking, he reaches into a pocket, takes out a billfold, and opens it up. As she looks on, he slides out some cash and a couple of pieces of paper.
There are no strings attached. It's your money anyway. It comes from the rent of the house. It's $400 in cash.
$400?
I bet I'd check here for $2,500. There's someone in Ramsdale who's prepared to take care of the mortgages on the house. Make a down payment of $10,000. That's the payment.
You mean we're getting $13,000? This is wonderful. Oh, come on, now don't cry. I'm sorry. Try to understand. I'm really sorry that I cheated so much, but I guess that's just the way things are.
She reaches out to him. He pulls away and runs to the door.
Hey, where are you going?
As he dashes to the car, she stares after him, holding the money.
Hey, well, listen, let's keep in touch, huh? I'll write you when we get to Alaska.
He quickly pulls away. Now the white station wagon drives into a veil of mist. Later, Humbert wanders through Quilty's messy mansion. Dirty glasses and ashtrays, paintings and statues clutter the front hall. Ghost white sheets are draped over all the furniture. The professor shuffles around, anxiously searching the area. He meanders into a sitting room. Spotting a harp, he fingers its strings. His brow furrows curiously as he steps toward the ping-pong table and resumes his search.
Quilty?
Humbert's gaze flits all around.
Quilty!
Now bullet holes blemish Quilty's 19th century portrait of a young woman. A note appears. Epilogue. Humbert died of coronary thrombosis in prison, awaiting trial for the murder of Claire Quilty. The End. Produced at Associated British Studios, Elstree, England.